go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Another week begins, and what a week I have a feeling it is going to be. Oh, my goodness gracious, this is the horn. It is the fourth day of October, and, well, you know what else it is. If it's the beginning of the week, it must be Moran Monday on the horn. Hurry, 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 step right up, get your red-hot Morans, here they come.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know,
more. Naples, Florida. Dean on our line for Republicans. You're on the Washington Journal.
May I speak now?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, I'm 90 years old, and I just wanted to ask a colored man, why don't colored people, instead of saying what we did to them, why don't they say what we did for them? They talk about the slavery, but since then they have given welfare, free medicine, free everything.
Ma'am, I think this is more of a conversation about the relationship between the administration and the people on Wall Street, and not necessarily one that's based on race.
Okay, I'm not a racist.
Sorry about the up yours, nigger. I hope this apple pie in some small way say thank you for your ingenuity and courage. Of course, you have the good taste not to mention that I spoke to you.
Of course! Yes, it is Moran Monday on the horn. 90-year-old, some things only the grave can cure edition. That audio was real, by the way, at least the part that wasn't Blazing Saddles. It was real enough as well, I suppose, but that was satire. The front end, though, the "Hi, you're on Washington Journal" part, that's real. That really happened. It happened, oh, a short time before the One Nation March began on Saturday, when it turns out there were more people there than... than all those Beckerheads who showed up on the 28th day of August. And I suppose they had been talking about the One Nation rally, and they had the One Nation rally up on the font periodically. Yeah. And there would be periodic shots of the crowd gathering, and there... And it wasn't all white people like God intended it to the Beckerhead rally. And so a 90-year-old lady from somewhere in Florida, why am I not surprised? You know, we need to hook her up with Juanita and just let Juanita set her straight. Wanted to know why the black people are all the time complaining, and she had that chance to ask the colored man, and... Well, she didn't want to miss it, because you don't want to miss a lot of chances when you're 90 years old. Oh! Oh, it hurts the stupid. It hurts. Oh, God. So that's where Moran Monday begins here on the horn, with a 90-year-old lady who wants to know why the black people can't talk about the good things that's been done for them instead of all the time talking about the slavery. Wow. Just wow. Got to doing me some arithmetic and realized that at the age of 80 years old, or 90 years old, that means our friend from Florida was born in 1920. Yeah, really. How's that grab you? 1920. Used to be when somebody was 90, it meant that they'd been born in 1890 or, you know, sometime in a benighted past when you could sort of expect that sort of stuff. But no, our friend there was born in the 20th century. And she's still alive to see the 21st. And she thinks that the black people are complaining too much. Did you catch the line here? Maybe the music made it a little hard to grab. Maybe the Blazing Saddles sort of put you off or made it a little harder to comprehend. Let's just go back to this one more time.
Naples, Florida, Dean on our line for Republicans. You're on the Washington Journal.
May I speak now?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, I'm 90 years old, and I just wanted to ask the colored man, why don't colored people, instead of saying what we did to them, why don't they say what we did for them? They talk about the slavery, but since then they have given them welfare, free medicine, free everything.
Ma'am, I think this is more of a conversation about the relationship between the administration and the people on Wall Street, and not necessarily one that's based on race.
Okay, I'm not a racist. That was my comment. Thank you.
Let's move on to Westchester County and Victoria on our line for Democrats.
By all means, let's do move on. See, that's kind of what has to happen, both temporally and on television call-in programs like C-SPAN's Washington Journal. You just have to move on. Did you catch that? We've given them welfare and free medicine. Where's the free medicine? Where's, honest to Jesus, where's the free medicine? There are so many sickening stereotypes embodied in that poor 90-year-old fool's words. And look, you know what? You know the saying, there's no fool like an old fool. But, you know, hooray, you got to be 90. And in the 90 years you spent on the planet, you learned nothing. You learned nothing. You know, bless her poor old racist heart. Old folks like her, you know, they want to ask things like this long distance. She would never come up on the street and say, "Pardon me, colored man, but why are you people always complaining about the slavery?" No. She and hers, they don't want to be talking to no colored folk. You know, face to face. Yeah, John Fox noting, "I'm not racist, but..."
God, Jesus.
Oh, it is, it really is. It's Moran Monday on the horn. And you know, the fact of the matter is, audio like that just goes to show that you really can't tell the Morans without a program. So you'd better, well, just rush right over to headonradionetwork.com, click the tab called Contribute, and become a member of the Thrifty 250, looking for 250 people willing to contribute $10 a month to keep the horn on the air. That is, to wit, somewhere between 5 cents and 1 cent an hour for all the programming that comes out 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, on the horn. And I'm not even counting the reruns. Just the live shows. Less than a nickel an hour. Or we can march bravely and boldly into a 21st century where someday, in the year 2100, a person using the chip inside their brain will think a question to the Planet Pixel Cube Journal about why won't those humans stop complaining about how we enslaved them We've brought them to the planet. We've given them free food and free medicine, and we only eat a few of them at a time. You know, it's funny, I'm getting emails from people saying, I know that old lady. Not that old lady, but I know that old lady. Kate, who's no longer on the road, who is more or less settled up in Montana for the time being right now, says, I've got a neighbor like that. We all do. We all do. She's 90 years old. My God, when you think about the atrocities that have been committed in this country against persons of color in the last 90 years alone, you're left flummoxed by something like that. But you know what? I want to thank, what was her name? Dean? Dean? Who is not a racist. I want to thank her for making that call with some of the precious time that she has remaining on this planet. I want to thank her for the wake-up call to every one of us that racism is alive and well in America. Because you know what? It's not just the 90-year-olds. And it's not just the 80-year-olds. Or the 70-year-olds. Or the 60 or 50-year-olds. It's not just any demographic. Racism runs like a poisonous, toxic, sickening river through the entirety of this culture. And if this nation lasts 1,000 years, we will still be working to eradicate it. It's getting a little more difficult to be that way openly. A little, but not much, thanks to the Repig-Lickin' Party and the teabaggers. But it's still possible. And we are reminded, every time we hear this kind of trash, this kind of garbage, of the work that remains to be done in this country. Where? What work, you might ask? Well, let's go to Tennessee. Yes, let's. It is, after all, Moran Monday. There's a mosque down there in Murfreesboro that really is a mosque, as opposed to the not a mosque, not a controversy in New York City. New York City, New York City. There's a mosque down there. Being as how it's in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, it is probably attended by some fairly well-to-do doctors and the like who come from foreign countries where Islam is the dominant religion, and when they came to America, they didn't think that they had to leave their religion at the door. Now, from my perspective, whether they were Hindus or Christians, Jews or Muslims, they would have been well advised to have checked their religion at the door, but I feel that way about the door to the planet. We are all better off without organized religion, and there is further proof later in the program. No kidding. But anyway, in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, some folks wanted to have themselves a mosque where they could worship their particular imaginary creature in peace and relative security. Well, a contingent of good folks from Tennessee, similar to the 90-year-old lady from Florida you just heard, are considerably up in arms around that state. You know, the lieutenant governor of Tennessee is a fellow named Ron Ramsey. Last month, he wondered, talking to a group of people, he wondered whether Islam was a religion or just a cult. The arson was also practiced against the Murfreesboro Center as well. Yeah, really. So now the opponents of the mosque in Murfreesboro Murfreesboro apparently being excepted from the First Amendment protections of freedom of religion. Mosque opponents have turned to the legal system. Yes, they've filed suit against the founders of the mosque, and they're looking for an injunction to stop the construction. I know that everybody's entitled to have as much lawyer as they can purchase in this country. That's the most clearly that I can express it. You can have as much lawyer as you can afford. But really, Joe Brandon Jr. is the lawyer for the opponents of the mosque. And with a straight face, he went into court and argued that stopping the construction of the mosque would not... Sit down. I had to. You got to, too. He argued that stopping construction of the mosque would not violate the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States because he claimed Islam isn't really a religion. No, instead of actually being a religion, Islam is a seditious movement that seeks to impose Sharia law on the United States. Really, no kidding. This is the pull quote from the news story about this incident. It is damned tough to stomach. But let's go ahead. Mosque opponents say that Islam is not a real religion. They argued in a Rutherford County courthouse last week that the world's second largest faith, with its 1.6 billion followers, is actually a political movement. It's a faith. It's a political moment. Hey, stop fighting. It's both. It's a dessert topping. It's a floor wax. Opponents say local Muslims want to replace the Constitution with an Islamic legal code called Sharia law. Notice they didn't produce any evidence of that in court. That's the way it is. When you're a wingnut, you don't actually prove anything. You just claim it and assume the proof from the claim. It makes poor old dead Aristotle, wherever his burned up ashes may have landed and transmogrified into God knows what by now, simply spin all dear God. You know, it's one of those facepalm moments for poor Aristotle. I assert it, therefore it is true. All mackerel are fish, all fish live underwater, therefore if I buy kippers it will not rain. Trout live in trees. That kind. So, Joe Brandon Jr., a lawyer from Smyrna, Tennessee, I know the alumni of the University of Tennessee are desperately praying right now, or at least hoping into the ether. Don't let him be a UT grad. Don't let him be a UT grad. Well, I don't know. That's a horror you will have to investigate for yourselves. Joe Brandon Jr. is a lawyer from Smyrna, Tennessee, and he represents a group of mosque opponents, and he stood up with a straight face and argued in court in Rutherford County that the proposed mosque isn't a house of worship. So let's re-examine. In New York City, a place that isn't a house of worship is a mosque, but in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, a place that is a mosque isn't a house of worship. He said the Rutherford County Planning Commission erred when it approved the mosque. Brandon wants an injunction stopping the mosque. Sharia law is pure sedition, said Brandon in his opening statement on Monday. The question here is why Rule 11 sanctions were not immediately imposed upon Joe Brandon Jr., lawyer from Smyrna, Tennessee. You see, Rule 11 is this thing that happens in civil procedure whereby the judge can do just about anything he wants to, including imposing sanctions, fines, also recommending proceedings in the bar, what have you, against a lawyer for engaging in frivolous conduct, for engaging in frivolous litigation, for engaging in frivolous practice that is not based upon current existing law or a rational modification of the same. Is there anybody out there, don't ask, is there anybody out there not out, inside the hearing of my voice here, everybody goes, Jesus, everybody knows it's a religion. Even people like me who despise religion and wouldn't pee on religion if it was collectively on fire will acknowledge that Islam is a religion. But not Joe Brandon Jr. Kind of makes you wonder about Joe Brandon Sr., doesn't it? Son, I want you to grow up and be a great lawyer and go out there and make sure people don't have the freedom to worship in this country. Whew, thanks, Dad. Sharia law is pure sedition. Oh, you wish. And yes, David from Tennessee, answering your question, aside from frivolous stuff, dumb shit stuff also counts, in the contemplation of Rule 11. Now, witness, for instance, Oily Taters, who is pure, unmitigated dumb shit. Well, she may find herself soon without a law license for what she's done. Oh, Jesus, this from Sandra. Hey, Bob, Gideon versus Wainwright much? That relating to an article called Reports from USA Today. Reports some states charge poor for public defenders. It's just getting a little thick around here, if you know what I mean. But that ain't all we got from Tennessee. Well, no, let's work the Muslim side of the street for a minute or two here. Because we've got, this from last week, from September 29th. 2 weeks ago, vandals spray-painted the words, Worship Satan! And drew a pentagram along the side of the Masjid Quba Mosque in St. Louis. The FBI immediately began investigating the incident, but made no arrests. Well, the mosque in St. Louis has been re-vandalized. The words, Worship Satan, were spray-painted over a different wall of the same mosque. The FBI and St. Louis police are both investigating.
Yeah.
And then there's Oklahoma. Brr. This coming November 2nd, a Tuesday, the eligible to vote in the state of Oklahoma will have the opportunity to go to the polls there to answer state question 755. It's the Save Our State constitutional amendment. We've talked about that on this show. It's a constitutional amendment that would prohibit state courts from considering Sharia law in making rulings. Mm-hmm. Even though there's not any evidence of anyone ever having considered Sharia law or having any plans of considering Sharia law. That's according to Representative Rex Duncan, who is the author of the legislation in the first place. He says, this effort is all about protecting our court system from being hijacked by an ideology that does not have America's long-term future in mind. Yeah, because everybody knows the Bible did. Talks all about America right back there in Genesis, right after the part where the Lot's daughters get him drunk and liquored up and have incestuous sex and get pregnant by him. It's right there. That's where they talk about America. Are we not at war with this ideology? Are we not at war with them? Then why would we give in to this? Give in to what? Yeah. One more trip back to... not yet. And then there is the Reverend Franklin Graham. This is More Ann Monday, after all. I know it may feel a little bit like Prayer Meeting Wednesday, but it's More Ann Monday because this is all More Ann conduct, really. He showed up on ABC's This Week, and he called Islam wicked, and he called Islam evil. This was during a televised town hall-style discussion on America's feelings about Islam. Of course, America really shouldn't be having any feelings about Islam insofar as America, according to the recent Pew Research Survey, which, where religion is concerned, shows that I am, in fact, smarter than 99% of America. You probably are, too, if you took the survey. But the Pew survey showed that Americans, as a general rule, know next to nothing about other religions, let alone their own. But ABC wanted to have this little, because I guess they figured it'd be good for ratings. And Franklin Graham, said, they want to build as many mosques and cultural centers as they possibly can so they can convert as many Americans as they can to Islam. I have great love for the Muslim people, but I have great difficulty with the religion, especially with Sharia law and what it does for women, toward women, toward non-believers. The violence that is given in under Sharia law. You know how Daffy Duck said, pronoun trouble? Well, Franklin Graham has article trouble. Because he says he has great difficulty with the religion. No, if we could, Franklin, buddy, you're halfway there. Oh, I'm rooting for you, Franklin. You're halfway there. You got one little article to get out of that sentence, and then the lights will come on. You'll feel cleaner and purer and better. Because the statement is, I have great difficulty with religion. But see, Franklin Graham, son of Billy Graham, who apparently Franklin Graham proves was not much of a parent. Franklin Graham can't say that because Franklin Graham has a delicious little hustle going in which he runs something called Samaritan's Purse and sucks money out of thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people's purses every year. But remember, Franklin has a point. Franklin doesn't like what Sharia law does to the women folk. Because, you know, that there Muslim Sharia law, well, that's mighty hard on the women, making them run around in the beekeeper suits and telling them where they can go and where they can't go and how long they can be there and what they can do with their lives. Yeah. There's only one problem. That's not a far cry from the behavior of right-wing repiglickins. Not at all. Senator Jim DeMint, South Carolina, attempted to convince pastors that economic issues are moral issues. At the Greater Freedom Rally at a church in Spartanburg, South Carolina yesterday, imploring them to help conservatives retake Congress in November. This from Nicole Bell's story over at Crooks and Liars. It is an excerpt of a Huffington Post article. In addition to reiterating anti-choice talking points on abortion and backing traditional marriage, you know, traditional marriage between one man and one woman at a time, between them, I think Jim DeMented's buddies, Flush Flimball and Newt Gingrich, they got about 10 of them traditional marriages amongst them. Yeah, that kind of traditional marriage. According to the Spartanburg Herald Journal, the senator went further and said, if someone is openly homosexual, they shouldn't be teaching in the classroom. And he holds the same position. Wait for it. Because remember, we're talking about what Franklin Graham said about how hard Sharia law is on the women's. Mm-hmm. He holds this is a member of the United States Senate. Did I mention that? Mm-hmm. I know. He holds the same position on an unmarried woman who's sleeping with her boyfriend. She shouldn't be in the classroom neither. And she certainly shouldn't be in the classroom if she's sleeping with her boyfriend and gets pregnant. We don't want the dirty, filthy pregnant women's in the classroom. Breathtaking, isn't it? Jim DeMented has also said that women who have been raped should be compelled by force to give birth to their rapist's baby. But as Nicole Bell at Crooks and Liars notes, if she's a teacher, she's not allowed to teach while she is busy in being all pregnant and stuff and walking around showing everybody that she's done had the sex. So, yes, David in Tennessee, in answer to your question, isn't Franklin's King James Version loaded with the same violence toward chariot loads of human units he's carping about supposedly in Sharia law? Yes. You don't really have to travel far at all inside the old King James Version, or virtually any other translation you might prefer, insofar as the King James is notoriously inaccurate, but they do love them some King James Version, because they like the idea of God talking like that with all them these and thous and artses and yees and yourns. Yeah, you don't have to go very far at all to find all kinds of hateful crap. That's why the enlightened people choose no religion. Right? Right. Oh, God. I've done this for 33 minutes now, and we haven't even scratched the surface. Here at some point, we'll get into an object lesson in Proto-Randian, sick, twisted, capitalist-driven, for-profit, you know, the nasty stuff. We'll get into that here in just a couple of minutes. Just you wait and see. Yes, indeed. I promise. Because, after all, it is Moran Monday on the horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. We're going to take a little break and come back to your phone calls because, assuming you all haven't hung up in disgust, well, we got some conversating to do. When one of the lines clears out, you know the number, 877-443-2366. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Cold iron shackles, ball and chain. Listen to the whistle of the evening train. Thank you.
Pinhead say when he quit smoking dope? Who the hell is this band? They suck. That's everybody's favorite joke who hates the Grateful Dead. But remastered from Europe 72, Tennessee Jed, the Grateful Dead. This is the Horn. It's Moran Monday. It's about 21 minutes before the hour and straight away to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan.
90-year-old lady just got to me. I'm
didn't do me any good either,
I have this
real ambition of living to get to be 90 and not being anything like that. I want to be a raving 90-year-old liberal.
Yeah. The thing that got to me was, she said, they got the welfare and all this jazz. They also got, cross burnings, lynchings, indiscriminate beatings, indiscriminate rapes.
Housing discrimination, lending discrimination. Yeah, on and on.
I'm not black, so I can't even begin to list the atrocities. Lady, get your head out of your ass.
Yep. Ron in Raleigh wrote in a few minutes ago, Susan, and said, how many people do you think realize that black people were purposely excluded from welfare at its inception? I have an article that explains the genesis of welfare, and it's not at all what many people think it was designed to be, and they won't spend a minute trying to find out any of its actual history. This 90-year-old, what's the feminine form of coot? Coot, C-O-O-T, most old geezers, hey, you old coot, cootette, I don't know. Or we won't be sexist at all, we'll call her a coot too. But she doesn't have the first clue. I mean, and bless his heart, as Michael wrote in and asked, find out what the colored C-SPAN host pours out of a long neck on the front porch to have the equilibrium to deal with that. Some keep calm and carry on we could all use.
I've got a term for.
Yeah?
90-year-old coot is a dried-up old bitch.
Well, okay, that works too, I suppose. It's a tad generic, but you know what? It works. But she's just as sweet as pie. You could hear it in her voice.
Yeah, right. Right up until the time she runs into somebody who's brown. What gets me is not everybody that age thinks that way.
No.
It just blows me away that this person was born in the 1920s, so she should, over her lifetime, she should have learned better.
She was 50 in 1970.
Yeah.
Then again, she's somewhere in Florida, and there are places in Florida, as I'm sure Cossack or Juanita, either one could tell you. There are places in Florida that make the entirety of the state of Alabama look like flaming liberals.
Oh, yeah. I know there are. They're just really, really bad. There's another reason I called in. I'm in partial mourning. Not complete mourning, because it hasn't happened yet, but... the governor's race here.
In Oregon.
Guess who's leading?
No, not the Ripiglican.
Yes. His sole accomplishment was he was in the NBA. Oop-de-doo. I guess that supposedly makes him eligible, qualified to be governor. He's running against John Kitzhaber, a guy who was governor. Got out of it, and then decided he'd better come back because we were in really deep, deep doo-doo. And the other reason I'm in mourning is because I got this off Rachel's show. Citizens United group is pouring money into Peter DeFazio's district. Pete, you've heard of Pete DeFazio, haven't you?
Oh, quite.
He's one of the premier liberals in the House. and they are pouring money by the bucket load into his district.
Yeah, the same thing that they're doing with Alan Grayson, too.
Yeah, and they're doing everything they can to bring him down.
I hope they don't succeed. You know, there were a whole bunch more people at that One Nation rally in D.C. than there were at White Stock. So hopefully that's some indication of the willingness, of our side to get out and get busy. By the way, what's the name of the ex-NBA guy running for governor?
Dudley.
Dudley.
I keep thinking of Dudley Do-Right.
Hold on, Merrill. Yes.
All he needs is a peaked cat, you know, and an old nine yards. But his sole, when they were doing these soft focus ads at the beginning of the campaign to introduce him, the sole thing they could come up with was he was in the NBA and he established a foundation. Whoop-dee-doo. Also, at the same time he was in the NBA and playing in Portland, he couldn't be bothered to live in Oregon. So he didn't live in Oregon because he didn't want to pay the property taxes. Now, I really can't complain about that.
In the state?
Yeah. He lived across the river in Vancouver, Washington.
Oh.
Now, you see, the thing is, that's fine and dandy unless you plan on running for governor. If you can't be bothered to pay the taxes in the state that you supposedly live and work in,
You would think that would be kind of a disqualifier for being governor. But then again, I just had an email in from Marty, and he says, tell Susan that the mayor of Sacramento's major qualification was being in the NBA, too.
Yeah, I mean, and from what I've seen of NBA players, they're not much brighter than boxers.
There's a lot of contact. It's not a non-contact sport.
And you know what happens to your brain when that happens.
Well, what's this Dudley's guy? Got Dudley guy's first name. He's been totally off the radar for me. I apologize for my ignorance.
Let me see. Just a minute here. Pretty sure I know it, but I want to double check here.
You hate him so much you haven't learned more than the last name. Is that what you're telling me, Susan?
More or less,
Chris Dudley.
First name, yeah, Chris Dudley. He's basically, he's got your standard Republican talking points. If you dig a little deeper, he not only wants to get rid of Social Security and Medicare, but he wants to get rid of Medicaid, and he wants to lower the minimum wage.
Jesus. Rand Paul Redux.
Yeah, more or less. I mean, he's not as frothing at the mouth nut as O'Donnell or what's.
Well, that would no, but see, that wouldn't play in Oregon.
No. He's doing it really smart for a politician, because, like you say, that wouldn't play in this state. But he has no qualifications that I can find other than the fact that he played around and got millions of dollars for running around on a basketball court, in short. And, what does that qualify him for?
Nothing. It qualifies him to run around some more in shorts.
Yeah, I mean,
what I want to know is, it was his career far enough in the past that he was back in the old NBA in the days of the NBA Guess Your Religion shorts. You know, like Kareem had to wear, and Jerry West and Larry Bird and those dudes. Man, that was That was almost like being a that was almost like being Baryshnikov.
Sure.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, as David in Tennessee, who has lived out there, lived out in Oregon for a considerable period of time, noted, he's frothing less and hiding it more.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make him any less of a wingnut.
He was in the NBA in 87 to 88. You know, not much of his, that was his rookie season. And played until...2003, I think.
Oh, okay. So he probably didn't have to wear the Guess Your Religion shorts. But let me back up. He's leading in the polls?
Apparently.
Over what? What did the Oregon Democratic Party run?
We're running John Kitzhaber.
That shouldn't be a problem.
No, you wouldn't think so, but you got to remember the times.
I suppose so, but Jesus, that's like...
And Kitzhaber has a problem. Kitzhaber was governor.
For a freak like that to be leading, I thought you were going to say that the Democratic Party had nominated, a chia pet.
No, Kitzhaber has the problem of he had the misfortune to be governor during the last recession. One of the big Republican recessions.
I can only imagine the ads.
Just went boom. Yeah, well, the thing is, he pulled us out of it. But in the process, it got ugly.
Well, cures like that often are.
Yeah. But this guy is just...
Well, good luck. Good luck. And I know you got a lot on your plate, so I appreciate you taking time for the conversation.
Yeah. Can you tell Agnes that Donald's back in his room? He's not in ICU anymore.
Hallelujah to that.
Yeah. Anyway, I just don't understand how, I can understand it. But when are we going to get enough judges on the court overturned to change that Citizens United thing?
You know, that's a really, really long answer. Citizens United is stare decisis now. And as such, people who actually take stare decisis seriously are not going to easily overturn it. You have to be a right-wing ideologue to just take, 100 years of settled law and throw it out the window. That's what the majority did with the Citizens United decision.
Or you have to be a human being who looks around and realizes this country's about to explode in armed revolution. If you don't, because this is getting ugly out here. And the right-wingers aren't the only ones that are collecting the guns. The progressives are arming themselves.
Well, you know what? Out there, you're more likely to have that. Western liberals and Southern liberals, I think, are a little bit more likely to say, I'm going to get me one of them.
Well, I think it's more a case of, you may take me down, but I'm going to bring an honor guard with me.
You're here. Susan, have a good night.
Yeah. Give my love to Agnes and tell Ferg to stay off that knee or I'm going to have to come back there and whomp him.
You may have to come back and whomp him. That kid won't stay. Yeah, I think he gets it from his mother.
You need to give him a graphic description of what happened to Joe Namath.
Made millions of dollars and got a pantyhose ad?
He can't walk.
I know. Susan, take care, dear.
Okay, bye-bye, honey.
Bye now. Yeah, Ferg had knee surgery on Friday, and we spent the weekend. Son, you can't be walking on that thing yet. Son, sit down. Son, please, son. You know how that goes, right?
Kate noting that she said, for the 90-year-old dried-up old bitch, it's pretty harsh. She says, don't assume that in the 50s and 60s she was anywhere around the media that advised her accurately of the civil rights movement, nor would she have had any social network to support enlightenment. I know a lot of farm folks who worked from dark to darker who had never seen a colored person. Western Plains, Canadian border states are full of these folks. She's a product of her culture and society. And she says, yeah, the 90-year-olds are scary, but the 9-year-olds are the ones who freak me out. The wheels are falling off, Bob. Remember, chaos is always self-correcting. Hoo-wee! The only thing is, our friend from Florida didn't sound like she was from out west or no. But, well, you know what I mean. But, yeah, I get it. But how can you live 90 years and be that damn dumb? Because I was dumb. Even if she's not a dried-up old boop, it was dumb. It's just dumb. Who let her get that near the phone? Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Jim, what's up?
First, I'm in a little better mood than I was Friday night, and I apologize.
A weekend is so good for making doing things like that.
Well, yeah, I was just so taken aback by what we discussed and that young man who was driven to suicide that I basically, sometimes you just get to the point that frustration absolutely destroys the thinking process, I guess.
I understand. And I think we all do.
I grew up with 90-year-old women like that when I was a boy in the 50s. You know, whose grandfathers had fought in the Civil War and stuff like that. And though I can't get my head around it, I'm familiar with that type of dialogue.
You know, as am I. I mean, I grew up with the same kind of folks, Jim. But I guess my larger point is, there's one thing. It's one thing to know a 90-year-old woman in 1955, because that means she was born in 1865.
Right.
And daddy had probably fought in the war.
Well, you know, Bob.
But this 2010, she was born in 1920, Jim.
You know, I remember talking to an old lady when I was, in my early teens, who was a good friend of my father's. And, you know, they both were interested in Civil War history for many reasons, because our families were involved in that thing. And I remember she had made the statement to me that she would no longer go to church and take communion, because black people were allowed to come to church and the Episcopal Church to share the chalice. And she said that she would not go to church because of that. And I went home and I discussed that with my dad, and I said, you know, I don't understand this. And the story was told to me within weeks of having signed the peace treaty with Grant at Appomattox. Robert E. Lee was at church in Richmond, at the Episcopal Church there. And a black man went up to the communion rail first, and no one would go up there. And the first person who joined him at the communion rail was Robert E. Lee.
Yeah.
Now, here was a man who led the Confederate armies and all that stuff, much against his will, but he, in the spirit of Christian brotherhood, was the first to join that black man at the communion rail, and, of course, the rest of the church followed. And that, to me, that's a very interesting anecdote.
It is indeed.
And this old lady, I just wonder where she was when the stories of Byron de La Beckwith, the murderer of Medgar Evers, the people who shot Martin Luther King, when the stories of the Black Codes and the Jim Crow laws basically replaced the institution of slavery and didn't change a thing as far as creating a better situation for blacks in the South during the Reconstruction period. I mean, was she not exposed to any of this type of information?
I don't know. you know, she clearly, by virtue of what she said, that's just all I wanted to say is I'm not a racist. So she doesn't think she is, but she just, you know, she thinks that the colored folks are complaining too much. And of course, that was the point driven home was the fact that unlike the Beckerhead rally, you know, White Stock on August the 28th, there was a broad spectrum of shades and tonalities of skin at the One Nation rally. You know, everything from Johnny Winter pink to, you know, the darkest shades of brown and everything in between. And she was bothered by that because, you know, they were rallying in Washington. And, because there's an element of that. She was, and I think this is a fair extension of where her head was. She was afraid. Because at 90, you know, she's been told all her life that, well, you know, they like them some white women. She wasn't sure if they were going to leave Washington, come down to Florida, and just have her for breakfast.
Well, as I said earlier, I grew up with that sort of thing, and I can understand the mentality of those people, and they're locked in time. And, you know, it's basically what I tried to say on Friday. I really don't think a great deal has changed as far as attitudes are concerned. And I don't think that a lot of the people on the extreme right, the reactionaries, they don't want any type of reconciliation between race or religion to occur. It is not in their best interest for that to happen. It is not in their best interest to follow the spirit of the story of the Good Samaritan. Wasn't the Good Samaritan the man who came along and helped a person after he'd been passed over by so many others?
Right, and the Samaritan was, of course, untouchable within proper, upstanding Jewish society at the time.
Just like Jesus Christ was. He was the same way. You know, when I see the way that the teachings of Christ have been so transmogrified that I simply would like to have a bumper sticker on my car and did have one if somebody rips it off. Dear God, protect me from thy followers.
Right. Yeah, that is corollary to the old line attributed to Gandhi that I like your Christ, I do not like your Christians, they are so unlike your Christ.
You know, one other thing. I understand that the president did sign the hate crimes bill back on 22 October.
Right.
And, of course, attached to that was a $650 billion appropriations for the Defense Department as well. And now ministers on the right wing are saying that this anti-hate law will impact negatively upon them and, in certain cases, drag them from their pulpits if they should happen to say anything against the LGBT community.
You know, I think there is an element in both of these stories, Jim, that speaks to where the culture is right now, namely that in neither the instance of the 90-year-old lady or the prevailing attitude at you know, on campus at Rutgers that led those two people to do what they did to that poor young man, we live in a culture that talks about these hatreds so openly now that things like this can happen. I don't think, in you being a Southerner and I being a Southerner, I don't think none of those old ladies that I knew would ever have dreamed of picking up a phone and calling and making the call that that woman made, but for the fact that if she turns on her radio on any given day, just about anywhere in Florida, she can hear Rush, She can hear Hannity. She can hear Beck. She can hear Savage. She can hear Laura Ingraham, Neil Bortz, on and on and on, just vomiting forth their filth. I happened to be out and about a little bit today, and I caught a little bit of Neil Bortz. And lo and behold, what did he say? He was expanding upon and postulating the talking point about the One Nation rally. Have you seen the litter that these filthy liberals left behind? How is it that the people can show up for the Restoring Honor rally on August 28th and leave the National Mall as neat as a pin, but these liberals and these, and he said everything but black people. Well, they're socialists and they just don't care, and they think that somebody's getting a government job for picking up all of that. And they left it a filthy mess. That's how it is with socialists and liberals.
Do these people not realize that they are performing a bloodletting operation upon their own country? I mean, what do they wish to happen to our country? For it to die of exsanguination?
Yes! Yes, and they want it to run as high as the knees on a horse in the streets.
You know, you've got this stuff coming on both sides. I remember the story. You remember the story about Ted Turner pulling his stunt on Ash Wednesday?
Not so much.
When they had the retirement dinner for Bernard Kalb, and some of the people who attended the ceremony had gone to church and had ashes on their forehead.
Oh, okay. And he made some sort of a crack?
Called them a bunch of Jesus freaks and stuff like this.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it's just coming from both sides. And honestly and truly, it is inimical to the spiritual, the moral, physical health of this country. And I just view it as, you know, we're almost getting into a self-destruct mode when people like this are making statements on one side or the other. And it's just, you know, for every kilogram of C4 that one is going to lob on the other, you're going to have 10 kilograms coming back on the other. It's just, it's really quite frightening.
I understand what you're saying, but I think to draw that plain and equivalent is not entirely correct, because most of what liberal people do is responsive. A matter of, you know, in good redneck terms, giving as good as they get.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Because we've been quiet. You know, we were quiet for 30, 40 years. Liberals ignored the chokehold that the right wing was getting on certain portions of media. We ignored it and said, well, you know, we're above that. We, you know, one of the reasons that you can hear Rush, Hannity, Bortz, all those people, Savage, Beck, on any given radio station is because liberals sat back and said, well, you know, they're so gauche. We're better than that. We don't want to be like that. And so consequently, the right wing took over the airwaves. And, you know, it's only in the last 5, 6, 7 years, you know, that there's been something in the way of a response. You know, Ben Birch built the White Rose Society at whiterosesociety.org. He built that in 2002. And Ben Birch is practically, as I've said before, the only reason that there is liberal radio on the Internet, because of the people that he archived for so long. And in 2002, that wasn't a lot of people. That was Mike Malloy. That was Randy Rhodes. Maybe Tom Hartman.
Right.
And that's it. And so, you know, in that vacuum, Jim, the right wing created this swirling cyclone of hate and vengeance and viciousness and bigotry and prejudice.
Well, Bob, what they have done is to create what I call a golem.
Yes.
That's exactly what they're doing. These people are creating a golem or a type of Frankenstein monster that is going to destroy them in the end. But the trouble is, it's going to destroy a lot more than just them. I mean, it's almost as if they're bent on some type of mentality that was possessed by Hitler when he realized he was going to lose the war.
Yeah.
And just take it all. I mean, they want it all. But what they're going to get are dust and ashes and the ruins of a once great country. Because they're so selfish and so self-willed.
But as long as that once great country runs no risk, Jim, of ever imposing Sharia law, at least not by name, never mind the fact that Jim DeMint's ideas are a direct manifestation of some of the contents thereof.
Oh, that man's absolutely crazy. You know, it really is. And, you know, and the that spirit that embodies Jim DeMint, it goes right back to South Carolina and what's been going on there. I mean, why do you think I haven't moved back there?
Oh, I know. I think about every time I see Jim DeMint's name, I think about one of my favorite artists, you know, wonderful, wonderful creative talent named Iris DeMint. And every time, and I just have this little thing that goes on in my head where I imagine some batshit crazy bull coming out of Jim DeMint's mouth and Iris seeing it and go, you know, I think I'm going to change my name to Pollyanna Epaminondas.
Well, let me ask you.
No, I don't even want to share the name. You know what I mean?
I understand. Let me ask you something about this Jim DeMint thing. Now, this gentleman who's running against him, this black gentleman, now, I understand there's a lot of baggage that he's carrying that isn't very good. And I just wonder, is Jim DeMint behind his candidacy?
I wouldn't be surprised a dime's worth. You know, Alvin Green is a sock puppet from the get-go. Now, apparently his filing fee checked out. He really did save his money so he could file and run.
Yeah, but he's got all these child pornography and all this kind of stuff. This is what they're saying. This, I talked to my sister this afternoon, who lives there. And it's a very staunch conservative. And you can imagine what our conversations are like.
Oh, those must be a joy.
I have to have a couple drinks before I get into it with her. And normally, basically, try to be as civil as I can. And then I will think about it and I will send her an email. Of course, we don't talk for 6 weeks after that. But I just wonder exactly, you know, this guy, she tells me, has child pornography and lots of other stuff, and was discharged, got a general discharge from the military. Now, if that would not be a perfect type of candidate who I think graduated from the University of South Carolina, but then got a general discharge and then is facing some type of pornography charge, what a perfect candidate for DeMint that would be to oppose him. To sweep him right back into office. And I just wonder, what's going on there? I just don't want to wrap my head around it because I just don't want to think about it because, you know, it causes me, given my background, my heritage, and where I'm from and the people I grew up with, it creates a lot of hurt and a lot of anguish.
I can well imagine.
And I grew up in the 50s when there were cross burnings, church burnings, had a cross burned in my own front yard, anonymous phone calls. I mean, it brings back a lot of bad things that caused me to feel really unwell. And it simply makes me wish to withdraw. You know, I've gotten to the point where I just don't even want to see people anymore and minimize my contact. The only thing I can do as far as political activism is concerned right now is to vote and vote my conscience and vote my heart. Man, I just feel so torn between the roots of my birth and the clarity of my own mind. Am I making any sense?
No, you are. You are making sense. Let me say, Jim, that what you're feeling is quite by design. All of these attack ads and this political filth that the right wing spews into our collective consciousness every 2 years, that's not designed to convince their base. Because for all they complain about it, a right winger, a Republican, is far more likely to vote a straight ticket than any Democrat ever was. Because, you know, we're Democrats. We're butterflies to be herded. Those ads, those filthy, filthy ads, and there's one out there right now about Nick Rahal that is absolutely sickening.
I've seen it, Bob.
Those ads are designed to demotivate you, to demotivate the normal people, to make us all just say, I want nothing to do with it, just push it away.
Well, that's the reason I said Friday night that I had a black uniform in my closet, too, with a Luger. That's what I meant by that.
I know.
I mean, honestly and truly, it gets me to the point where I am so frustrated and so driven to the extreme where I would like to go out and, like I say, either make them immigrate or eliminate them. But I know that that's not right. It is unchristian. It is not right to stoop to their level.
But see, Jim, that is a telling point because you have the moral breadth and the ethical breadth to be able to say that and come back and say, I was wrong. You just did something on this program that I guarantee you will never hear a caller do on right-wing radio. It doesn't happen. They don't backtrack. They don't apologize. They swing again.
I don't have any problems with apologizing when I know I'm wrong, and I never have had. I mean, I'm not the most decent and honorable person. I'm no saint. I've done a lot of crazy things in my life, and if I had to live it over again, I'd probably do them again.
Especially if they involve aquarium pumps and stirrups on, right.
Exactly. But, you know, I don't mind admitting my own faults and my own errors. And I don't mind saying, you know, I was wrong and I can think a different way.
But see, that's the hallmark of a person who refuses to live in fear, Jim. That's the hallmark of a person who is, you know, Plato is the one who said, sweet Jesus, you know, 2,300 years ago or more, that the unexamined life is not worth living. We're examining our lives. They don't examine. They don't do nuance. The right wing does bumper stickers and hate.
I guess they do. And to end this conversation, I must say this. You know, I don't mind admitting when I'm wrong. And I don't mind admitting, and I'm very proud of the service I've given to my country because I love this country. And I hate to see what these people are doing for it. And as far as I'm concerned, these people have never done anything for their country. They've never served. They've never tried to make things better. They've never tried to use the law and to use our system of government to improve our country in the eyes of its own people and the eyes of the world. All they've done is suck and take away, and just basically they are social and political vampires.
Yes, lampreys.
Pardon me?
Lampreys. You know, the little fish that attach to sharks and just...
I mean, I have no more respect for them than I do a tick that I would pull from a dog's ear or any type of person who is simply there to destroy, and they're doing it with malice and forethought. They know what they're doing, and they just don't care.
I know. And by the way, you've gotten a couple of emails in during the course of our conversation before we ring off. Juanita wrote in and she says, please tell Jim that I appreciate what he said on Friday. He spoke for many of us. I don't know that what he said was wrong. I believe many of us feel that way in some degree or another. And, you know, Juanita is a sage in her own right.
Well, I think the world of Juanita, and I know she's a cat lover, and we are both allurophiles, and I think she's a great lady, and I thank her from the bottom of my heart for that, for those kind remarks, because I know I don't get many from probably some of your calls.
No, you do. You get more than you know. And David, who is actually down there on the ground behind the lines in South Carolina, if you will, this is our South Carolina, David. He said Alvin Green is a repig-licking project. Even his name rhymes with the Democratic candidate for governor, Shaheen. And ads use this. And David offers, there are just too many coincidences. It's too cute to be unplanned.
Well, you know, you mentioned Vincent Shaheen. I know Vincent Shaheen. My sister taught him when he was in school, and she is working for him. As a matter of fact, she's right now planting yard signs out for him. So, I mean, you know, even though she's a conservative, she has a lot of good points. And there are a lot of good people in South Carolina, in spite of the asshole who is running for senator from that country. I mean, from that state.
Jim. Many of them there think they are a separate country, and that goes a long way back.
You're right there. But anyway, I appreciate your time, and like I say, Friday night I was a little excessive. But, Bob, when you push me into a corner, I'm not going to withdraw like some wallflower. I mean, I know how to fight, and I speak M16 real good.
Well, there's a whole bunch of liberal America that could take language lessons from you, Jim. And I mean that sincerely. David in Tennessee offering, he says, put me down for some Jim support from Friday, too.
Well, I appreciate your kind remarks, and I did not mean to be excessive and things of that nature because, you know, I have a good heart, and I appreciate life. And like Rhett Butler said in Gone with the Wind, I hate waste. I hate the waste that occurred with that young man at Rutgers. I mean, he could have been another Itzhak Perlin. I hate the waste that these people are creating in our own country. And they're using their waste products to destroy the spiritual mentality and the body politic that made me proud to be an American and made me proud to serve my government.
Well said, Jim. Hear, hear, my friend.
I thank you for your time.
Take care.
Good night, sir.
Bye now. Andy writing in from California, and he says, having Alvin Green run against Senator Jim DeMint, oh, this is sharp. See, this is the kind of thinking that we need to be doing so that, like I need to lecture. This is sharp. Andy says, having Alvin Green run against Senator Jim DeMint eliminates a race that the Republicans have to worry about. The teabaggers can then use Jim DeMint's campaign money, his war chest, if you will, to put toward other races, like Ms. O'Donnell in Delaware, possibly. And Andy adds, Jim is always a great call. I can feel the pain in his voice. Kate adding, Jim speaks for me more often than he knows. Friday night was a shining example of that fact. I am so far gone that I needed to get off the road. I'm allergic to cats, says Kate, but I still have a good heart. And we know it. We know it. And onward we go. Let's see if you're still there. Hey, welcome to the program.
I knew I should have pulled up that W sign when I drove by today.
How are you, Gene?
Oh, I guess. Okay. Well, another vote for Jim, by the way.
Okay.
No, I was going to, those guys in Tennessee, I mean, it's kind of funny because it's odd because in a way I kind of, the really dark, evil part of me, actually with the hopes that justice, yeah, I'll hear the case, you know, because it'll go all the way up to the Supreme Court.
No, you know what I want?
What?
I want, and this is that really nasty, mean-spirited part of me, okay? So let's just understand that from the outset.
Mm-hmm.
I want for Joe Brandon Jr. And this, see, I'm not nearly half as decent a human being as Jim is, Gene.
Yeah.
Because I will not recant this, and I will not repent of it. I want Joe Brandon Jr. to be standing in court one day when he does the Fred Sanford, Elizabeth is the big one dance, and have it be the big one. And I want his sorry Smyrna, Tennessee ass taken to an emergency room, oh, I don't know what, the cardiac care center in Nashville. And I want him to be grabbing his chest when a member of that Murfreesboro congregation, who happens to be a physician from Pakistan, comes in to treat him. And I want, in that moment, I want Joe Brandon Jr.'s whole world to crash on him, Gene. And I want, I won't get it because they're not as indecent as I am. I want the doc to look at him and say, listen, we're going to save you. You're going to be okay. But all you got to do is say, there is no God but Allah and Muhammad is his prophet. That's all it takes. And you'll be a Muslim, buddy. And you'll live.
Well, I was going to say, I could just see the.
Because Gene, the whole point is, do you know how long it would take Joe Brandon Jr. to get, with what might be his last breath, there is no God but Allah and Muhammad is his prophet, out of his mouth?
Deathbed conversions, huh?
It would happen faster in English than it could even happen in the original Arabic.
See, I was thinking more like, and by the way, you are a true liberal. You are a true liberal for that kind of thing. Because, see, you keep that kind of response just oriented to one person.
Because, see, I mean, they got all kinds of nationally known hospitals there in Nash Vegas, Gene. I mean, they got Vanderbilt, they got St. Thomas, they got Centennial. And every last one of them has docs in them from, shall we say, out of town.
Oh, I figured that. I could just see him laying on the table, and hearing this Pakistani doctor going, "Oh, did you hear about they think we're a political movement now, blah blah blah," and just have that doctor say something like that offhand, and just the look on the guy on that lawyer's face to be just priceless, I'm sure. No, I'm afraid. I really am afraid that, because these guys, I mean, they're dancing on thin ice, because I was thinking about what Jim DeMint said a couple of weeks ago to the Tea Partiers about, you're either with us or we'll kill you. And it's like, gee, that kind of sounds like a political movement there, sort of. And so, you know, I just kind of, boy, that's being awful. That line is getting awful blurry there. Are you sure you want to do this?
See, that's the thing. That, you know, if we go back to our scenario with Joe Brandon Jr. laying on the gurney, you know what would happen? You know what would actually happen if anything was said at all, Gene? He'd say, "You hate my kind. You hate the faith of me and my fathers. But I will show you in this moment that my God is greater than yours, because I'm going to save your sorry cracker ass."
Yeah, but I remember there was a guy around here that I knew. He used to have this sticker sign that stupidity should be painful. And I'm afraid that the Republicans and the conservatives, if they keep going down this path, they're going to be in for a world of hurt. We're going to be, unfortunately, we'll be drugged right along with them. And, boy, I ain't looking forward to that. I was really hoping to get out of here before. I haven't got my new chair yet, and I've been working on this since Well, let's see. It happened in May, and I went on my trip and on back, and I started this thing alone in August and had the evaluation a couple weeks ago and haven't heard a thing from him. And this is all I've got coverage. Boy, I'll have to hurry up with that chair. Anyway, I just had to throw that out there. I keep running across the, keep sending occasional news stories. I'm sorry I haven't posted a lot. It's just that I get kind of like Jim. It's like,
you're a man with a life, Gene. It's okay.
But I couldn't believe the thing about the Orthodox Jewish women putting on the burqa.
Yeah, Israeli rabbis are to clamp down on the growing number of devout Jewish women, note, Jewish women, wearing the burqa by declaring the garment an item of, wait for it, sexual deviancy.
God, why did I take it, Bob?
You know, how stupid are these rabbis? Do they not realize that this is a self-preservation maneuver? One, there's plenty of, you know, depending on how hardcore you want to read the law, there's plenty of law that says that they can do it.
Uh-huh.
And two, maybe you're a little, because, you know, everybody over there is just on tenterhooks waiting for the next thing to blow up. Maybe you're a little less likely to be blown to kingdom come.
Yeah. I
if you're wearing that.
I know exactly what you mean, but it's like, oh, boy, it's getting too hard to can't tell my fundamentalists about our program. Anyway, I'll let you go because I'm sure you got other callers, and I'm good to talk to you.
All right. Take care, Gene.
Take it easy. All
right. Bye now. That's News Ninja Gene, also calling from Oregon. You know, Oregon is the home of our news ninjas. And Gene gets up every morning and reads the entire internet. I'm not joking. Okay. And? Well, the other lines were all give-ups. You'll have that from time to time, I suppose. But did you... While, since Gene mentioned... Israel, this one's kind of hard to ignore. At the insistence of the husbands of some burqa-wearing women, a leading rabbinical authority is to issue an edict declaring burqa-wearing a sexual fetish that is as promiscuous as wearing too little. No, really. A burqa, according to these religious authorities in Israel, a burqa is as kinky, as dirty, you know, because, you know, the whole human female body is just head to toe, just, and that's the thing with religions, you know, it's all these monotheistic sky god religions. In our ancient past, they replaced the earth mother religions, where women and female function and all of that were routinely dignified and honored. And somewhere in the dim, dark past, some power-hungry males invented a sky god. And they called him El, and they called him Allah, and they called him God. And they called him Jupiter Optimus Maximus, and they called him Olympian Zeus. And it was all a way of trying to get the daggum women folk under control. Can't scratch nor spit nor fart nor nothing around them no more, them and their mother goddesses, daggum them. So entire religions arise, and they are mainly the monotheistic ones. And a central tenet of them is that women are dirty. Women are filthy. Women are right next to the devil, his own cloven-hoofed self. Right? Yep. So it has now been interpreted by these wild-eyed fundamentalists in Israel, these rabbis, that there is no difference in terms of dirtiness between a woman wearing a bikini,
And I'm talking about full, you know, full on butt floss Brazilian walk down the, you know, down the beach in Rio, you know, one of those, and you know, two triangles passing for a bra top. A burqa is as sexually kinky as a bikini. Hint to the rabbis. Neither one is a sexual garment. Because, see, if you can make garments be sexual, then it's not much of a leap to say that when I threw her to the ground and raped her, she had it coming because of how she was dressed. A small group of ultra-Orthodox Jews in the town of Beit Shemesh chose to don the burqa, usually associated with women in repressive Islamist regimes, 3 years ago in a bid to protect their modesty, or perhaps their hides. Since then, the habit has spread to five other Israeli towns, causing alarum among ultra-Orthodox religious leaders who once saw it as a relatively harmless eccentricity, even though the number of Jewish burqa wearers is not thought to be more than a few hundred. There is a real danger that by exaggerating, you are doing the opposite of what is intended, resulting in severe transgressions in sexual matters, said Shlomo Pappenheim, a member of the rabbinical authority preparing to make the edict. And then there's the story of academic repression coming out of Israel that's just... They've got their own little... who's that freak on the right wing here in this country who attacks professors for teaching mathematics too liberally and teaching geography too liberally and teaching geometry too liberally and teaching biology too liberally? David, somebody will send me an email. Well, they've got one of those in Israel now. They're calling for the head, they're calling for the head of an academic at Ben Gurion University who had the temerity to write an op-ed in the LA Times last year saying that Israel has descended into fascism and the only way to help Israel's, to save Israel from itself is for a full-on worldwide boycott of Israel. There is a man with some courage. And they are coming after him. The hardline right-wing Likudniks and the like have sent him death threats for what he said. Now they want his job. They want him out on the street. They want him starving. Guess what? They just proved the truth of his assertion, didn't they? Because that's how fascism behaves. Yeah, thanks, Marty. David Horowitz. Marty is apparently cleaning up the spit take off of his monitor right now. Wearing too much is worse than wearing too little. this from Reverbo real quick, like lampreys? Lampreys? It's not that some people don't know what they are, but whoever hears that on the radio? I don't believe I've ever heard a talk show host refer to a lamprey before, other than on maybe a science show. Vampires, sure. Lampreys, not so much. You've dipped into new territory with lampreys, oh, aquatic one in the box. I only know about lampreys because I've heard they're tasty. Because I'm shallow that way. So let's go back to the phones. What do you say? I think that'd be a lovely idea. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Well, hey, Fancy.
Hey. I got positive things to talk about right now.
Well, I do too. I'm positive the world is going quite mad.
I get my weekly alternative newspaper here in Tucson, like a lot of places in the world, and the first place I turn to is Savage Love. Dan Savage.
Yeah.
And this week he and his spouse Terry, have started a YouTube channel called It Gets Better.
Yes.
And I spent about an hour just checking it out. beautiful, inspiring, sweet. It's addressed to the LGBT community, but it also kind of applies to anybody who's like weird, which a lot of us are. And I was just totally charmed with some of the responses here. Have you looked into it at all?
Yeah, I have. I had a look, and it is. It's inspiring, and I hope it. I personally hope it just goes like a Kansas prairie fire.
Oh yeah, I want it to virus like crazy. And I was expecting a certain amount. Now there's probably a filtering system of some sort, because there will be folks who say, okay, go ahead and die, kind of things. But by and large, I only came across one, which was kind of a craziness, or possibly in this kid's mind, humor. But NTB, not too bad. So I'm kind of like, wait till after the show and then do a little Google on YouTube. It gets better. And there's some, I just am so impressed with this, because I think one of the things that's so sad for the odd child, whether it's sexual or any other odd child, and is that you're alone.
The aloneness is horrible. The shame is horrible. And if I might point out, it is the fact that we live in a culture that has any definition. And I don't care if the kid is into 24/7 stamp collecting, butterfly chasing, if he wants to play with Barbies, or if she wants to play with Tonka trucks. There is something essentially wrong in a society fancy that determines that there is anything that constitutes, short of the kid running around playing with matches and trying to burn the house down, that there's anything in a culture that is defined as an odd child.
I think I've talked about this before, but I said the artistic child, as we are the only ones who have to defend ourselves at an early age when they go through, what do you want to be when you grow up? And the kid who says, I'm going to be a nurse, I want to be a fireman, I want to be a truck driver. And they go, yeah, good for you. And then the kid who says, I want to write stories, I want to sing songs, I want to dance. And they say, yeah, but what do you really want to do? That as a creative child, as an artistic child, there's not a lot of encouragement going around. And I can remember being defensive at a very, very early age. And just like one of the ongoing themes of this, It Gets Better, is once you get into your life, which for a lot of people is college, you know, or you leave your little hometown and you go.
Well, that's when little Baptists like me go, oh, I don't have to go back anymore.
Yeah, and I remember just, you know, going. Suddenly, I'm a student searching for in a fine arts program, and oh my God, it was the world changed. Everything changed around me, and that was amazing. So, I'm just kind of recommending that to anybody who needs a little pick-me-up about the world's not all that bad. Because I have moments where I think, okay, we're sunk. You know, we've lost.
Well, yeah, you just look over to your pogo poster on the wall. Yeah, you're right. We have met the enemy, and they is us.
They is us. I watched part of the Saturday event on Ustream. And good coverage, nice video. They did really good. I don't know where they picked up their video from, but it was good. And I'm chatting away in the little chat room there. And we had one of those, yeah, but I don't know. It's kind of all flinging. You know, and I'm thinking, God, I bet this person's really in demand at parties. Who was actually correcting or noting the grammar when the speaker misspoke. And I'm thinking, God, you are really a charm to have around there. And so I don't know how much, but we got to somewhere about the Beck thing, and I said, yeah, I said, probably. I said, now, the social justice thing. Just because Jesus had a lot of ideas doesn't mean they were all good. And maybe that social justice thing probably was not one of his best. You know, so I'm just kind of like criticizing Christ. And I'm waiting for responses. Because I'm baiting. And I'm waiting for responses. And it's like, zip, nothing. I don't know if that's a radical thought. But, you know, well, maybe not every idea that Jesus had was a good idea.
Well, look, there's a passage in there where he refers to, and if he's referring to it, remember, he couldn't lie, he was the Son of God. Where there's a passage in Matthew, I think it is, where he refers to, and those who have castrated themselves for me. You can put that in the Jesus didn't have a good idea that day category.
What do you mean? He was the son of God in the form of man. Of course, he could lie, but
no. I'm only quoting their dogma, Fancy.
What? Strange world.
And then some.
Ah, scary stuff. Okay, I'm going to go away, but do look at it. It gets better. I think that Terry and Dan had a fabulous idea in putting that together. He was here in Tucson. I spoke with him a couple of years ago. He's very accessible. He's a sweet
guy. Oh, he's a good man.
He writes beautifully. I admire him tremendously, but my admiration is just, what a simple, brilliant idea this was. And,
it's just so much of art, Fancy, and you know this. So much of art and so much of goodness is born out of heartbreak and hardship. Whether it be the pure catharsis of the blues and jazz that rise out of abject misery, where the only thing you can do is make music, or whether it be this impulse rising out of Dan Savage. You know, I was in how it is with me and food porn, right?
Yeah. Oh, incidentally, where are you standing on the voting thing there?
Oh, it's over. I finished it like number 46. Still not so bad. Way over 700 votes. But anyway, I got to contemplating the classic New Orleans po' boy.
Yeah.
This is going to seem really, really out there, but it actually ties in. And I happened to, in the course of a conversation with David in Tennessee, I happened to read the history of the po' boy. And I don't know, you've been to New Orleans, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
It's just a magnificent, messy delight on this wonderful, wonderful French bread. And so the history of that is that there were a couple of brothers who came to New Orleans, and they were streetcar conductors. And at some point, they got out of it and started selling sandwiches and stuff. And the streetcar conductors went on strike. And this was back in a time when going on strike meant you and yours were likely going to starve for a while. And so, dedicated as they were to their union, they began making sandwiches that they could just pile on whatever they had and make it tasty and sell it cheap. So it wound up being fried oysters and fried shrimp and things like that. Fried catfish. You know, the stuff that the Tony silk suit types, you know, didn't eat at the time. And the way the sandwich was named is that one of the streetcar conductors who was on strike would walk through the door of their little sandwich shop. And somebody holler, "Here come another one of those po' boys. Gonna have to feed him again." Hence the classic New Orleans po' boy.
That's such a good story.
Born out of desperation, born out of hunger, born out of the longings of poor people simply to have basic human dignity while on this little sojourn around the planet. And frankly, my mouth is watering.
I want to comment on the essay that you wrote, because I remember it, sophomore year in high school, the English class essay assignment, the greatest invention of man. And I chose the greatest invention of man at that time to be the written language, because it hit me that, wow, this is really big time stuff. You know, you can take the thoughts of somebody who lived thousands of years ago and just read them. That's pretty cool. And so I did this classy little essay on the written language. But it had never occurred to me that we seem to be the only species that cooks, that modifies food.
Yeah, they say that the first person to eat a raw oyster was about 30,000 years ago off the coast of South Africa.
It's pretty awesome that one of the things that marks our ascent into humanness is the way we handle food. And I just was very, very impressed with your focusing on that aspect. And wow, yeah. I'd never really thought about it then.
Well, I'm crossing my fingers till November 1st. I just want to be in the top 10. And then I can send somebody the autographed copy of Medium Raw, because I've already got a copy.
That's so cool. I'm just really impressed with the concept. I've given it pleasant daydreaming thoughts. And otherwise, wishing everybody the best and a good week ahead.
All right. Thanks, Fancy. You too.
Bye-bye now.
Bye now. That's Fancy calling from, as you could tell, Arizona. And as we go forward, hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Hey, so, you know, this is a bit remote, but listen, that I see you responding to that candy, because I was looking at that thing on the Ustream.
Oh, God. Yeah, you watched that. Okay.
And that's just the one that stuck out in my mind, that candy. Man, what an idiot.
Oh, so everybody can know what you're talking about. Livestream had coverage of the One Nation rally on Saturday, and I went to Livestream, Sandra, because my audio on C-SPAN kept kicking in and out. And I thought, well, this is my, you know, two dented tomato cans and a string cable company. But no, it was the audio truck at the event. So I'm watching it there, and you can comment in the chat. That's just rolling by the screen there by logging in with your Facebook account. And yeah, there were, for some reason or another, there's nothing quite like, you know, when they were having their Beckerhead rally, I didn't go to where they were broadcasting it and sit there and needle the wing nuts.
Yeah, no, that's the thing I was thinking then the whole time. I'm like, you know, why are you here? And, you know, I was just laughing at you because you weren't engaging it. I'm always amazed by the liberals who try to converse with these freaks, you know? And they can't spell, and they're quite, I mean, it was just, anyway, it just...
Oh, yeah, and yeah, this woman named Candy, who couldn't spell Candy, if it wasn't already established as her Facebook account name. And, you know, every time she said something, it would just be misspelled, and you know, come on, honey, you know, spell check is your friend. Copy and paste. You know, you're looking like an idiot here. I'm trying to help. But I don't. I don't, Sandra. I don't engage them anymore. I don't.
No, exactly. And I'm sort of, you know, it's appalling to see that, you know, after all that's gone down, there's still an effort to do that. It's like, no, you know, move on. You know, move on as far as, like, you know, either cuss them out and move on. They're like, there's no need to engage them. For what purpose?
Well, but see, isn't that, Sandra, an essential liberal impulse of ours, that we really do want to understand them? We really, really do want to look for some common ground where we can sort of all say, hey, we're all Americans and we're going to be. But you know what? Maybe some people come to the realization later than others. I've been dealing with these freaks long enough that, you know, there's no point. Because no matter how far into the conversation you get, sooner or later, They're going to call you a communist, a fascist, an Islamist, a communo-fascist Islamist, queer lover, whatever.
No, but the thing that kills me, and I hate the fact that if you're a somewhat effective communicator, that's also used against you. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, you're an elite.
Well, and it's just sort of like, you know, please. Anyway, I mean, I didn't say that's really sort of minor in the big scheme of things, but I was just sort of just shaking my head thinking, good Jesus. Then I saw your name up there, and I was rolling. I don't know. And I know, I'm just, you know, it's just silly, but I just thought, oh, great. Anyway, so, so they canceled their latest appearance, Jerry Brown and E-Meg. She, you know, she's running scared. Her ass is...
Yeah, I didn't real. They didn't go real well in front with the Univision folks, did it?
Oh, shit. Well, she's dropping in the polls. And the thing that's so sweet is 119 million. You see what I'm saying? Give away all your damn money, you dumbass. Anyway, I just, you know, it's so funny because it's still a close race, but I think Jerry is up 4 or 5 points. And I mean, dude ain't done shit. Do you understand how funny this is?
No yard signs, no ads.
No, nothing. We got a little bumper on the family car now because, you know, we went to a union picnic. And, you know, he was there speaking, sounding crazy, looking crazy, but handing out his wares, so we grabbed something. But, yeah, he ain't done squat, and it's like, hello. You know.
What did you see that? Did you see that news story out earlier today saying that the Citizens United groups have outspent the conservative to liberal have outspent us 7-1?
Well, oh no, that's much more serious, and you know the sort of contorted results. I just am, I don't know, bracing myself for what that's going to mean because. Yeah, you know, they're just going to finish us off if that goes uncontested. And it looks like any effort that Congress has made, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, is nothing. You see what I'm saying?
Well, absolutely.
And it's just sort of, is this going to be the nature of our electoral politics from now on? If it is, we're done. You know what I mean? There is no democracy as we once know it, if this is what's going on, because...
Well, I guess the other question is it possible for... And remember, you'll never go... Whoever said it was right, you'll never go broke underestimating the American people.
Shut up, yes.
Is it possible that we might actually reach some sort of tipping point, Sandra, where we are absolutely sick of the electoral filth that these organizations put out? I want to throw one past you real quick, audio-wise. I hope you can hear it okay. This is, now, bear in mind, I'm still not going to vote for the guy. But this is sleazy. This is what Republicans do. This is an ad that the Republicans are running against my congressman in the effort to get... You remember the West Virginia Supreme Court judge who got caught swanning around the French Riviera with Don Blankenship?
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, that dirty bastard is the one who is the guy who is challenging my congressman Nick Joe Rahal, and frankly, neither one of them can get to the foot of the mountaintop removal cross fast enough. They both can't blow up mountains fast enough to suit either one. So there's no real difference between them on that issue. But nonetheless, they're trying to. They are. Remember, well, maybe not. 2004, the National Republican Committee. The NRC sent out mailers to only two states in the United States, West Virginia and Arkansas. And that mailer showed a knife being put through the Bible. And it said, "This is what John Kerry wants to do to your faith." Now they only...
Oh, what?
Yeah, they only sent it to... They didn't even send it to Alabama and Mississippi, for God's sake. They sent it to Arkansas and West Virginia. And so they have, and remember also that in the 2008 May presidential primary on the Democratic side here in West Virginia, 23% of those who voted said they voted for Hillary Clinton. These are Democrats, mind you, Sandra. Said they voted for Hillary Clinton because they couldn't stand the thought of one of those in the White House.
Right, yes.
Okay, so it's 2010. It's 2010, and this is the ad that they're running against Nick Joe Rahal.
Okay.
Now, I happen to have been an early supporter of Barack Obama. I campaigned with him in the hills of West Virginia. And I proudly chaired the Arab Americans for Obama campaign, a nationwide group dedicated to mobilizing Arab Americans and bringing light to those issues we care about.
Call Nick Rahal and tell him what you care about at 202-225-3452. The West Virginia Conservative Foundation is responsible for the content of this advertising.
What was the Arab thing? I'm sorry.
Did you notice the ominous music that started when he said Arab Americans?
Well, no, the whole music, the whole thing was like some sort of horror show, you know, just some sort of scary ride at the fair. What?
In a world where Arab Americans are involved in American politics.
Right. No, I mean, what was he talking about? I mean, they just throw out those terms and they sort of accentuate that.
Dog whistles.
Listen, that's outrageous. And that group, these sort of groups are all fronts for these billion-dollar, I mean, there's probably about a handful of these families who are...
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised if the Koch brothers were the neck-deep in West Virginia Conservative Foundation.
Well, see, you know, think about it, Bob. $1 billion can go it can go forever. You know, it's so much money, you can't even wrap your head around it. So they can do... This can go on and on and on. And the only thing that can stop them is the fact that they're going to be dead. They can't avoid that. But otherwise, the money will never run out.
No, especially in a jurisdiction like West Virginia, where you've only got to buy ads on maybe 3, 4, 5, 6, maybe 8 TV stations.
No, but I mean, if you look at California, you know, E-Meg, her money ain't really helping her right now. So... You know, but the thing is, though, why should our system be subjected to this, though, Bob? This is the thing. I understand what you're saying, but saturation point or not, don't call it a democracy then.
No, no.
It's a plutocrat. This is what we're looking at now. We're looking at a plutocratic system here, really. If you have, like, the likes of Bloomberg and this E-Meg and all the, and then these, this sort of a weird trash that's being sponsored by the billionaires. And the thing is, the only other good thing is that I think a lot of people are becoming aware of that on some level, which, I mean, more people than used to be, let's just say that. At least in California, everyone knows that E-Meg is rich. I'm keeping it real simple.
Yeah.
And E-Meg connection, and if you're rich and you're trying to become a governor, you know, you don't have to be too steeped in politics to make that kind of connection. Like, maybe that's undermining your interest, you know?
But the other side of that inquiry, Sandra, is how stupid. Back up.
Yep, don't.
If these ads work, if these money bombs work, and Marty just wrote in to say there's a money ad bomb about to drop in favor of Carly Fiorina out there.
Yep.
If these things work, this business, I mean, since it's where I am, let's deal with that. If it actually works to have scary music and the mere words Arab American are enough to destroy a candidate, then, you know, we know what the billionaires are about. We know what they want.
Well, no, but what
does this say about the electorate if they're willing to buy into it? All we have to do is validate their prejudices and you're in?
Well, no, we'll see, though. See, you know, also what you were pointing out is, well, there's, you know, I'll go back to California. Obviously, there might be a point where it don't work, because you remember Prop 16, PG&E before they blew up the town, spent $45 million to try to have their way, and it lost. Don't forget. People were like, you want to do...
But is there a difference, Sandra, between a ballot initiative like that and human candidates? And what I'm saying, I think, is if PG&E had said Arabs are going to build a mosque at municipal electrical stations if you let this go through, would that have worked? Or is there a possibility that it just doesn't work in that circumstance, but it still works where people can get their real bigotries right up in front of themselves in a political campaign?
Well, the thing is, I mean, we'll see, but I'm sort of a mixed mind because I have to admit, it worked with Willie Horton, and they're talking about black folks, so why the hell in this day and age would it not work with the sort of evil Arab? So, you know.
And that's what I'm saying, because, yeah. It worked with John Kennedy's gonna get, or John Kerry's gonna get your Bible, before, 4 years before that. They brought Charlton Heston in 2000. They brought Charlton Heston to the Beckley Civic Center, and he stood on stage, with hordes of screaming West Virginians in the audience, and he held his musket up in his shaky old hands, and he said, "They can have my gun when they pry it from my cold, dead fingers, and Al Gore is going to get your gun." And it worked. For the first time in Jesus, 40 years maybe, 50, West Virginia voted for the Republican presidential nominee, and need I remind you that had those five little pissant electoral votes gone to Al Gore like they should have, the Florida recount wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah, I know. I mean, but the thing is, though, the gun thing is just so mystifying to me. I don't see any Democrats doing anything about guns.
No, but the thing is, Democrats also aren't trying to, you know, Democrats aren't responsible for the stink bug infestation or the bed bugs. But you can bet damn sure that somewhere on K Street, Sandra, there is a right wing pig licking the PR firm that is right now, as we speak, focus group testing ads that say that they are.
Well, no, but. The thing is, but maybe you should look at it like this. You know, when you're sort of mystified by that sort of stuff going on and then the dumb voters voting for that, don't forget that they, you know, don't care about government except for what it does for them. I think that that is a huge issue because you got the whole crying of the Tea Party, big government, when every one of them folks are getting money from the government. So I just think if we don't want the government to work for those people mentality, I mean, I don't see how you can, you know, you can escape that reality. And maybe that is what these voters will respond to.
You know what? The living, breathing example of that is something that you sent along to me a little bit ago. And let's take just a couple of minutes here and listen to the local Action News Team Channel 6 WPSU report coming out of Obion County, Tennessee.
All right.
Got a sec?
Yeah.
A house goes up in flames and firefighters don't respond despite the homeowner's plea for help.
I hadn't paid my $75, and that's what they want, $75, and they don't care how much it burned.
Imagine your home catches fire, but the local fire department first won't respond, then watches it burn.
That's exactly what happened to a local family tonight. A local neighborhood is furious after firefighters watched as an Obion County, Tennessee home burned to the ground. The homeowner says he offered to pay whatever it would take for firefighters to put out the flames, but was told it was too late. They wouldn't do anything to stop his house from burning. Each year, Obion County residents must pay $75 if they want fire protection from the city of South Fulton. This family did not pay. And the mayor says if they don't pay, they're out of luck. Local 6's Jason Hibbs joins us now with our top story tonight. And Jason, we've talked about this issue before. A home's on fire, but the family didn't pay the $75 fee, so the fire department doesn't respond.
Wait. Did you hear that, Sandra? We've talked about this issue before. The South Fulton Fire Department has let other houses go up in flames.
Listen, well, yeah.
I mean, this is an Ayn Rand wet dream, isn't it?
It is. I just, as soon as I saw that, I thought, are you kidding me? Is this, you know, what? Yeah. Was that the end of the report?
Oh, no. I don't know if we've got what it takes to get the rest of the way through it. Yeah, let's do go back for a second.
Finally got those firefighters to leave the station.
Well, Jennifer, this fire went on for hours because garden hoses just wouldn't put it out. It wasn't until that fire spread to a neighbor's property that the fire department would respond. It turns out the neighbor had paid the fee.
I thought they'd come out and put it out, even if you hadn't paid your $75. But I was wrong.
And because of that,
this is all
that's left of Gene Kranich's house. They called 911 several times, and initially the South Fulton Fire Department would not come. The homeowners say that the fire started right here in these two barrels. It then slowly spread to a shed and then on to the house. They say it took a total of about 2 hours for that fire to get from here to there. The Kranichs told 911 they would pay firefighters whatever the cost to stop the fire before it spread to their house.
When I called, I told them that. My grandson had already called twice, and whenever I got here, he thought maybe I could get something done. I couldn't.
It was only when a neighbor's field caught fire, a neighbor who had paid the county fire service fee, that the department responded. Gene Kranich asked the fire chief to make an exception and save his home. The chief wouldn't. We asked him why.
The house is burning to the ground. Why didn't you guys respond?
City manager will make a statement in the morning. You can see him in his office.
We asked a few more questions. He would not answer and called police.
I need the sheriff's office out here.
To have us escorted off the property. Police never...
Wait! They weren't even on their own property?
Oh, shit!
But they called the cops on him?
I wasn't even at the fire station. What?
No.
Listen, I don't mean to laugh.
No, I understand, but isn't this just a picture of it? This is the, my God, this is an America broken into a million pieces.
Right,
this is what they want.
But the shit is deep with the poor people talking like, huh, what? Oh, we thought that, you know, we never thought that it really meant. If we don't want services, that it really means we won't get services. Did you catch that whole confusion?
Oh yeah, but you know what's even better is if you know, kind of like you watching the watching Candy the Wingnut the other day on the chat at the live stream. You can always count on the National Review to jump out there and be in the forefront of just batshit crazy, evil, mean, and stupid. I mean, we're talking about the pig-eyed, evil, mean, and stupid variety.
Mm.
Listen to this.
Oh, can't wait.
The world is full of jerks, freeloaders, and ingrates, and the problems they create for themselves are their own. These free riders have no more right to South Fulton's firefighting services than people in Mule Shoe, Texas, have to those of NYPD detectives. We're not done. One of the duties of the... You're going to love this language, Sandra. One of the duties of conservatives in this soggy... Wait, back up. I'm entirely with the South Fulton Fire Department here. In the terms of Nico Colchester's great 1996 essay, they are being crunchy rather than soggy. Crunchy systems are those in which small changes have big effects, leaving those affected by them in no doubt whether they are up or down, rich or broke, winning or losing, dead or alive. Sogginess is comfortable uncertainty. The richer a society becomes, the soggier its systems get. Light switches no longer turn on or off, they dim. One of the duties of conservatives in this soggy fallen world is to stand up for crunchiness. For the fire department to have extinguished the Kranich's fire would have been soggy, even aside from the considerable degree of sogginess it would have left on the property.
Oh, wow. Oh,
I mean, that's straight. That's probably straight out of the Von Mises Institute or the Ayn Rand Society. What did they call them in Atlas Shrugged?
But there's a parasite and the producers.
Right.
No, that's incredible. The whole thing, that whole story is incredible. Those poor people, you know, sort of sounding all shucks and what, where, what happened. God, that is outrageous.
And
that's what's happening. That is what their libertarian voting ass is going to get. I mean, I'm sorry. I know they didn't say what.
No, they didn't. But you know what? You've got a right to make a pretty good guess that when they went to the polls in 2008, they said, I don't want one of them in the White House.
But the thing is that, you know, it's just it makes me feel sick to think about some poor person begging the services to help save your house that's burning down in front of you. I mean, really. Wow.
You know, David, who is in Tennessee and is a proud Tennessean, notes, Tennessee became a state in 1796. Since then, we've been reasonably adept at establishing functioning government. Sadly, that has been eroding since the Repig ascendancy that began in 1986. And he's not kidding. You know, they had those god-awful, horrible floods this past spring.
Right.
Well, everybody's, well, that's never happened before. Well, it had. It had. But the problem, Sandra, is and when it happened in the mid-19th century, the government stepped in and gave everybody money to rebuild.
Right, right. No, I'm saying there was some response and recovery to past disasters. Now we're living in a time when something bad happens. There is no going back. You're definitely fending for yourself, and you're on your own. But this reminds me of something. I heard some story today which just left me cold. Somebody was retelling about how a kid or a friend of theirs hurt their ankle, broke their ankle, went to the emergency. They didn't have any insurance, so all they could do was put a cast on it. Now, when you have that kind of ankle injury, it's a fairly simple surgery where they put plates and pins in. It's pretty standard, or it used to be. Now, this poor kid's going to be crippled. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. And well, I mean, look, I can tell you, and I'm not telling tales out of school. I think I've mentioned it before. My son-in-law got hurt about 10 months ago. He broke his arm. Didn't have any coverage. Went to the ER. And he'd broken his arm, you know, at his wrist in several places.
Which meant some sort of surgery was called for.
Right. Now, the guy he was working for wasn't paying workers' comp. And he said, that's all right, I'll cover your bills. I'm going to do the right thing. But he shows up at the ER as a private pay, and the orthopod that's on duty in the ER shoots x-rays of his arm and doesn't even cast it. Sent him home in a splint. And a couple of months ago, or a month or so ago, he found out that, and now he's walking around in a cast up to his shoulder because it hadn't healed.
Yeah, and the thing is that if you don't get those sort of breaks, I mean, this is just sort of a throwback to I don't know what century here now, where when you break something, you're crippled because the procedures aren't that difficult. Yet, in this country now, if you fall over and break something and you don't have insurance, well, I guess you're going to heal deformed and you're going to be crippled. I mean, it just didn't really hit me that this is really is what's going on here now. I didn't mean to jump from the fire.
No, you didn't jump.
It's just doing my head in that. Because it's so easy to break something, Bob, I'm telling you.
Yeah, it is.
It's not like, you brought it on yourself, you're acting responsibly, how'd you break your leg? You know what I mean? It's easy. Things happen, you know, and you should expect to live in a modern society, and if you break an ankle, you break a wrist, that you won't have to be crippled for the rest of your life.
Well, that's the whole thing, you know. if you've got kids in your house, you can be going from the front door to the kitchen and trip over and cripple me Elmo and you're done.
I mean, you know, you're killing me with that little added bit. But no. And so I'm listening to this thinking, you know, we're talking about some young person who's now going to be have a deformed, because, you know, when it heals up, repairing it goes from 16,000 to 50, 60,000. You know what I'm saying? If you're looking at it.
Sure.
Monetarily.
Right.
And it's just kind of stunning. It's like, wait a minute. There is no means to provide these basic surgeries for people. Shit, you could go to emerging democracies and get, or emerging economies and get that sort of care.
Oh, no kidding. I mean, look, I'm being hillbilly centric again. I apologize, but you know, we've got a Senate race going on here in West Virginia, and of course they're running the same kind of. If John Racy could get away with running ads referring to the fact that Joe Manchin is a dirty dago, he would. But it's not as easy. You know, Arab American is easy. You know, pointing out Joe's Italian heritage, not so much. So instead, they're running pictures of Joe Manchin standing next to Barack Obama. And he was a proponent of Obamacare. And there's this line of, you know, he's taken away our freedom to choose health care. And so what does Obama do? I mean, or what does Joe Manchin do? Instead of standing up and saying, you're damned right I supported that. We got a lot of sick, hurt, aching people in this state who need health care, which is the damn truth. Joe Manchin said, well, you know, I've been thinking about it, and I'm not so crazy about that Obamacare anymore. I think we need to repeal parts of it. And I saw that the other day, Sandra, and come nigh losing my mind. Because, you know, there's stuff in there that should really, really matter for working people with no coverage.
Yeah, no, it's true. Well, what's happening with your son-in-law?
Yeah.
What's happening with him now? I mean, he has this huge cast.
Yes, can't work, can't go look for a job, you know, nothing.
But he still needs the surgery, right?
Right. They've gotten some coverage. Because they're finally desperate enough. You know, you only get coverage when you're down to damn desperate. You know, I've got I've got a rusty red pickup truck. I am therefore not eligible for PoFolks coverage. It's like that.
No. I mean, you know, it's just hideous. I mean, I have all kinds of dental work that I need to get done. And, you know, there's not a prayer in hell unless someone drops 20 grand on me. And I'm not exaggerating. You know what I'm saying?
Got to get that lottery ticket.
Well, but it's a joke. That's not gonna happen. I don't play lottery here because it's kind of like just an extra tax on poor folks.
Right. Well, no, the lottery is a voluntary tax on the stupid.
Yeah, and it's, you know, once in a while when I'm sort of lost my mind and it's like $5 million, I might cough up a dollar. But, you know, I usually don't just because it's just a pipe dream. But the thing is, you know, and dental is like the, you know, the last of my concern. It's like, I just have to pray, you know.
When in fact it should be among the first of your concerns because all the science, there's that stupid science again. All the science says, listen, you're more likely to be killed by problems that originate in your mouth than you are by, you know, the lung cancer, various and sundry other maladies and so forth. Because the infections that begin with gum disease and stuff, they go right into your system. Bang.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, it's hideous. But, you know, that it should be one on the front line. Everyone should have access to dental care because it's preventive. I know what you're saying. But, no, it's just it's stunning what we have been reduced to in this country. And what really disturbs me is how everybody else seems to be just moving on. And we're just going to...
Well, let me take you back to Tennessee for just a minute. Because there's a sub-story here. And I wouldn't have known it save for the fact that I watched the Action News Team Channel 6 team coverage report. And that is that The fire started in a couple of rusty old 55-gallon drums. And maybe this is just because I'm a hillbilly, I know these things. You know what those drums are used for?
No.
That ain't the barbecue. They're so far out in the boonies that they burn their trash.
Oh, okay, yep.
So what that means is they either refuse to pay for or they do not have available to them any sort of sanitation service to come and take the garbage away. I know that because it was that way here when I was a little boy and this was my grandmother's place. She very assiduously segregated her trash, metal from glass, and burnable, plastic, paper, what have you. And once a week, out to the burn barrel she went, and up it went. It was perfectly legal at the time. But again, that's a failure of services. That is a failure of government because, you know, you really don't want people burning their trash because, you know, a spark gets loose. Hey, look, a spark got loose and set Bubba Joe Bob's soybean field on fire.
The thing is, I mean, the whole thing reminds me of, you know, Maslow's pyramid. You know, you have your levels.
Yeah, oh, yeah, the hierarchy of needs.
Right, well, we're like stuck on, you know, is it two? You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's dropping, and it's kind of like, why in the world should I be sitting around wondering if I got access to the police, fire department, sewage? When I live in...
Yeah, I'll notice that when the fire chief called the county sheriff, they didn't ask the fire chief if he'd paid his cop subscription.
It's just, you know, I just think that, you know, and the crunchy thing, see, I am traumatized by what you just read. that one, it will stick. I'm scared. I am just scared, basically, because you don't have a civil society. This isn't a civil society. I don't know what.
No, this is Haiti with cable. That's what this is. Just, you know, Somalia. This is Somalia with satellite service.
It took, you know, I'm a bit slow because I'm like overwhelmed by this paper I'm working on. That's funny. That's a good one. I'm gonna use it. Haiti or Somalia with.
It's Haiti with cable or Somalia with satellite. You pick it.
Oh, you know, I laugh entirely too much at this bullshit because it's all really horrible. But, you know, Bob, I am so glad we can share.
Well, as am I, because, I, you know, I'd lose my mind. You know, in the course of our conversation, Sandra, just to let you know, James up in Oregon just shot me a note with a little bit of history to it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all of a sudden, I understand. Have you ever, okay, work with me. I'll let you go in a second. You ever been around somebody with a cocaine problem?
Oh, who are you talking to, Bob? Please.
Well, you know, I got to ask. I try not to operate on assumptions here.
Oh, my God. Okay, yes. Go ahead.
You know how they are? Me. Oh, let me talk. No, enough about you. Let's talk about me, you know?
It's severe.
Yeah. Well, take a good hard look at Ayn Rand. And all of that enlightened selfishness BS that she preaches, right? That me business.
Mm.
Guess what? She was a tweaker. She got hooked on amphetamines when she was writing The Fountainhead, which is before she writes Atlas Shrugged.
Well, maybe that's why she liked it up the ass. Sorry.
Well,
in there.
Maybe it is.
Yeah, that explains her ass fetish. Shit.
She had been on Dexamil for about two decades.
Oh, you know what? I mean, it's not that's perfect. Perfect. With her, you know, juvenile, infantile philosophy. Wouldn't you know, it's tweak time. That's perfect.
Yeah, only from a tweaker.
Oh, my God. It's a pity she didn't have a goddamn radio to pull apart as opposed to writing that gibberish. God damn it.
I know.
We made it so much. No, when it says a lot about the state of the American psyche where that is acceptable philosophy.
The fire department stands in front of a house that's burning down for 2 hours and watches it. Who brought the weenies and the marshmallows?
And then calling the police on people asking questions. Unbelievable. I'll let you go. But there's one thing you should be keep in mind right now. There's this bill. It's called the Combating Online Infringement and Counterfeit Act. It's the attempt at them to ban domains in America.
Oh, no.
Keep your eye on it. It's a Senate bill, and it's, I guess, COICA is the, Anyway, it's something. It looks real bad from what I can read because it gets to decide what is an infringement or counterfeit, and it can ban domains. It's going to protect corporations, blah, blah, blah. It's just not good.
That is disturbing in the extreme.
Yeah, you know, and it's Hatch, Schumer, it's a bipartisan. Durbin, of all people, if you can believe that shit. Oh, and my very own senator, fascist Feinstein. You know I'm sick of her. When is she going to croak? She's 74. Get on.
Man, she's going for that bird record.
No, the thing about her, you know about her and her, like, we all think that she killed Mayor Moscone.
Oh, I know. You are not the first person I've ever heard say that.
Well, that bitch is dangerous. She's scary. Anyway, I'll leave.
And you just said it on the radio. No small aircraft, Sandra.
Listen, I'm when it goes dark, I gotta scram. You know it.
I know.
Okay.
Keep the bags packed.
Oh dear God. Okay, take care.
Later, Sandra.
Bye.
Bye now. You know, I was just thinking of something. I gotta run this for you. This song was one of those things when you've got teenagers in the house, weird things come in. Check this out because when we started talking about Ayn Rand being a tweaker.
What do tigers dream of when they take a little tiger snooze? Do they dream of mauling zebras or Halle Berry in her catwoman suit? Don't you worry, your pretty striped head. We're gonna get you back to Tyson and your cozy tiger bed. And then we're gonna find our best friend Doug. And then we're gonna give him a best friend hug. But if he's been murdered by crystal meth tweakers, well, then we're shit out of luck.
Welcome to America, you know? And if our politics have been shaped by a Dexamil tweaker, yeah, you know the rest. Let's go back to the phones. I hope. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up, Tony?
How you doing?
Doing good.
Good. How's the family and the wife and kids good?
Well, you know, we're just trying to keep Ferg off the knee.
Tell them to watch it. Sandra's a tough act to follow, so I'll do my best. Anyway, getting back to what you were talking about earlier, I want to talk about Meg Whitman for a second.
Sure.
Did you see the way she threw her maid under the bus?
Oh, yeah, with a bulldozer.
I mean, think about this. First of all, that woman took care of her kids. They exchanged Christmas presents. They did this and they did that. Anybody out there who questions the morality of rich people, I mean, you don't know me. I don't know you. 10 years of friendship, she stepped right on her. That shows you what rich people will do when they want to get something. She threw that woman. It was an insult.
Oh, but what's precious about it is the fact that she thought she was going to get away with it, Tony.
But then,
you know, the document with her husband's signature on it comes up. Oops.
But what I'm saying is, anybody who doubts for one second what the rich really think about us working class, that says it all right there.
Oh, with a big old period on the end of it, or an exclamation point.
I sat there watching that, and I'm thinking to myself, you scumbag. I bet you she took her kids to the hospital when they were sick. I bet she waited on those kids on hand and foot when they had fevers and stuff because Meg was too busy out there, you know, solidifying her career. No, that woman is going to lose that election, and I'm going to tell you why. Because people are going to see, well, if you can do that with somebody that's supposed to be your friend, what do you think they're going to do to us? You know, when it comes to California, she's going to throw the whole state under the bus. That was disgusting. You know?
Yeah, yeah, it was. And, right, California, with that woman in office, it'll be no place to, you know, you could at least make, and God, this hangs in my craw to even make the argument. You could make the a semi-credible argument that once in a while Arnold got something right. Not very often, but once in a while.
That's for sure, but that was really, really just, that was elitist at, that was elitist in its raw, ugly form. And changing subject for a second, that fire department story, that's really true. It really happened.
Yes.
Okay, there's another thing that all you people who want to outsource and privatize everything, that's just the beginning of that, too. If you privatize fire departments, you're going to see that all up and down. Because can you imagine that? These guys train, they become firemen, and they're told, no, you can't.
And not one of them willing to disobey orders and fire up the pumper. Not one, Tony, not one.
That's private. That's another thing that's privatized for you. I mean, that there. Anybody who doubts what privatization is going to do, that's it. I'm going to skip around a little bit, if that's okay. I've been on Drudge Report all day, and I haven't seen one article or one photo about that rally this weekend.
But oh, it didn't happen. The coverage by CNN was minimal at best. There was no coverage by Radio Rwanda. None.
I mean, the Drudge Report, not one photo, not one mention. Every time, I mean, when Glenn Beck could fart, and it would be front page news, excuse my language. But, I mean, there was, it's like it never, so if a tree falls in the woods and nobody's around to hear it, it didn't really happen. I mean, just, I haven't seen one thing anywhere. On anybody's show, so I don't know, you know. And once again, if anybody doubts that there is a left or right wing media, that's. I used to think Drudge was impartial, but not anymore.
Oh no.
And but he did put this. Listen to this. You know, he didn't put that, but he did put this. You ever watch that show, The Dog Whisperer?
Yeah.
Okay, Caesar said that Obama doesn't treat his dog very well. They put that on there.
Oh, for Christ's sakes.
No, I'm telling you, go to Drudge where it says, Dog Whisperer blames Obama, doesn't think that Obama's training Bo right. Really? With all our problems, really, that's what you're going to put on there? I mean, it's frightening. I don't understand that. But anyway. You were talking about Billy Graham's son. What's his name?
Franklin.
He said that he, okay, maybe you want to refresh my memory. He said that
he loves Muslim people, but he has a real problem with their religion.
Okay, Muslims are trying to build mosques all over the country. And
yes.
Correct? It's if we don't keep an eye on them, they're going to build mosques.
And then they'll be a converting the white people.
Okay, you don't think that Graham wants to build churches all over the country? Nobody's watching him.
Well, but see, he's white, and he's going to build Jesus churches, and he's taking Jeebus to the poor people through Samaritan's Purse and flying on a Gulfstream jet to get there.
Let me tell you something. You know, you were talking about how, like, they've been going around spray painting mosque and everything.
Yeah.
This is how, I don't know if you want to say bad or not, but this is how it's gotten. You know, every Friday at 1 o'clock, I go to my mosque, you know, and lately we've been having to have an armed security guard from 11 o'clock on Friday to like about 2:30 or 3 o'clock.
Just so you can go to Friday prayers.
Can you imagine that? You don't see that at Christian churches. I mean, I was walking up to go to prayer and I saw this guy standing there, and he had a flap jacket on and he had a handgun, and I was like, what's this? And I asked him out. He goes, oh, it's a security guard. I go, really? And apparently, I don't know what's going on for sure, but can you imagine that? This is America. And we have an armed security guard to watch to make sure nobody does anything.
Yeah, to make sure that some crazy-ass right-wing domestic terrorist, let's, you know, and I'm not, I'm not, I'm not, I'm not gooning at you, Tony, but let's make sure that we use the language and put the language to its proper usage. You have a security guard at your mosque, so some crazy-ass, white, right-wing, domestic terrorist won't come in and murder you.
That's
the way you gotta frame it.
But in this country, should it be that way? I mean, I don't...
No, hell no, it shouldn't be that way. You know, that's one of the things that I'm kind of proud of. I haven't read all of anything. Well, I have read all of the Bible, and I have read all of the Quran.
Yeah.
Rig Veda and the Upanishads, not so much. I've read some Buddhist stuff and some sutras and so forth. I forget what they're called. But, you know, the right-wingers are like, well, I read the Quran, and it says in there to slaughter the infidel. Well, you know, I've read the Bible, and it says there to go ye unto the valley of Jackoff and kill every man, woman, and child, should the beast of the field, and the things that live, crawl, creep, swim, fly, or breathe.
Wait a second. Did you say the valley of Jackoff?
Yes.
That's great. I never heard of something. I know you're being funny, but that's a good one. I'm sorry I'm laughing.
But, I mean, it says it in there. There's crazy shit in every holy book.
I know. It's just...
But, I mean, I remember, you know, I remember nights sitting and reading the Quran and just weeping for the beauty of it.
Yeah. But you do... It's all religious books have beauty if it's read right.
Yeah.
They all sound really... It makes you want to cry. Any book, the Bible, anything, if you read it right and you take it with...
No, I'm sorry. That part in the Bible where Lot's daughters say, "Yea, verily, yeah. Let us get daddy all liquored up and do the nasty with him, for there be no horny males in this here valley." There ain't no beauty in that.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but it also, like in the Quran, when it says, "When you meet them, smite their neck," that's not beautiful either. But you understand what I'm trying to say? It's
you know, I got to tell you a little story. Matt Osborne has referred to this a couple of times. Matt is a trained Arabic speaker.
Wow, that's fantastic. I wish I could speak Arabic.
And he still retains some of it from the days of his teaching and his training.
That's great.
But we went to D.C. together for the Appalachia Rising event.
Cool.
And so we Tuesday last, we were going to go out and get some lunch. And we're in Manassas, Virginia, and Jesus, it's the clown, and it's the burger thing, and it's on and on, just corporate nastiness. And we look across into this little strip mall across from our little hotel, and there is some Arabic script on the wall, on the sign, and it says halal lunch.
Okay, cool.
And I just looked at Matt. Matt looks at me and says, "I know where we're having lunch."
Why not, man? Why is better than fast food?
Yeah, and so we walk in there, and there's a couple of guys, and there's a precious little four-year-old running around. And we walked in and got the combination lunch number two, which was like kifta and some marinated chicken over rice.
Oh, cool.
But with a garbanzo salad and a green salad to go with it. And, you know, it was like $6.
Did you turn into Man versus Food for a minute?
Well, yeah, kind of. Now, actually, I was channeling my inner Bourdain.
Okay, go ahead.
They started asking of us, you know, why are you here? I said, because I live in West Virginia and I can't get this there.
Yep.
And Matt goes, and I live in Alabama and I can't get this there. Oh, you've had this kind of food before? I said, anytime I can.
Why not?
And they were, and you know, I don't want to make more of this than it was, but it's these, it's valuable for me to go out and about once in a while just because it expands my own horizons, because I had this little epiphany because they, you know, because it don't come much whiter and paler than me, Tony. I mean, you know, right?
Well, I don't know.
I mean, we're talking about a guy who sunburns under the refrigerator lamp.
Yeah, I've met you. I understand. Go ahead.
And so there was a little bit of misgiving there. And so we're sitting there having our lunch and I said, man, this is really great. And the guy goes running off into the kitchen, hollering to the cook in Arabic. What Matt told me was, they love the food. They love the food.
a good one.
And it was just a beautiful little moment because that misgiving that they said, do these guys know where they are?
Oh, but God forbid.
No, because we live in an America in 2010 where a couple of decidedly white Anglo-Saxon guys walking into a halal restaurant, well, yeah. You know, they might be packing heat.
I see what you mean. Well, that's you're kind of holding up the mirror to the situation they probably have to deal with every day, and it's kind of funny. It kind of makes you wonder, like, wow, they were shocked, which would tell you that, okay, maybe we are going the wrong direction. Maybe we need to step back a little bit. But I hear what you're saying. But it also must have made you feel good.
Little 4-year-old Abbas came over and looked at us like zoo animals.
Mommy, what's that?
Yeah, and it was okay. Beautiful. And mama came over in her hijab and everything, and she shooed little. And I said, no, it's okay, it's okay.
Honey, that's a white person.
Yeah, and we carried on a conversation, you know, what's your name? How many years are you?
Yeah.
And Matt starts writing, and I know what he's doing because I see him going from right to left.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And he's writing out Arabic characters and I guess doing the alphabet with little Abbas.
Oh, that's cool. See, that just shows that people basically want to be good. The average person, we don't care about all that stuff. We want to be good. If they were just to take all the politicians out of it, we'd have
if you
to
sit down and break bread with somebody, and I do know Tony, for instance, the absolute mandate that is placed on hospitality in the Quran, and I know why it's there because of the nature of the desert culture and everything, plus the fact that it's the right thing to do as a human being.
Well, of course.
But it's also because if you sit down and you break bread with somebody, it's awfully hard to kill them.
Because
the next thing you know, you're figuring out that they're every bit as human as you are.
Yeah. Let me go in another direction. That was a great story, if you don't mind me saying. Let me go in. I don't know how much time you have left. Let me know when you're running out of time. Couple of kind of bummer notes here. I've been looking at reading some war stories, and apparently the Taliban has infiltrated the Afghan troops, which is not a good thing. The soldiers were training. They're sneaking their spies in. So you know that's not going to turn out very well. And you also know that they're attacking UN supply lines in the Pakistan, and that's not turning out good. It just seems like this has been going on for so long that I don't know if you remember the last piece of good news that came out of that area. It just seems like the same thing every day over and over and over and over. I mean, when are we going to learn that we need to get out of there? You know, I mean, it's just, when was the last time you heard any good news?
Never. I mean, let's see, what did I hear the other day? I heard that General Pervez Musharraf, who is, I guess, in some form of self-imposed exile in London, has said, well, he's going to come back and run for office because the only thing that can save Pakistan now is a military dictatorship.
Like they don't have one already.
Yeah. But what he means by that is he wants to come back and kill what's her name's husband because he didn't finish the job when he killed Benazir Bhutto.
Well, she was no saint, but she was better.
No.
than what they had going though. She was definitely better than what they had going. I mean, she did some stuff too that wasn't great, but I would have picked her over who they have now. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And one more thing here. I hate to bring this up, but you were talking about Jim DeMint.
Yeah.
Now, apparently, he doesn't think that a woman raped by her father should abort the baby. Is that correct?
He doesn't think a woman raped by anybody should abort the baby.
Does he have daughters?
That I do not know.
We should. I don't know. I don't understand this. I mean, why make somebody carry that around with you?
Why try to make that person's... My God, what a horrifying decision to try to make. I mean, I cannot begin to put myself inside the soul, psyche, or skin of a woman who has been subjected to that brutality. Why try to make that woman's decision for her, regardless of what the decision is? If she decides to abort the baby, why impose yourself on that decision, Tony? If she decides to keep the baby, why impose yourself on that decision process? But see, that's the thing. I was raised in this world where the first thing, you know, right after I learned not to, you know, just go pee on a wall somewhere, I was taught to mind my own business.
Okay, you have girls, right?
Yes.
Okay, I believe you have three, am I correct?
You are correct.
Okay. Now, God forbid, and I'm only saying, please understand that I don't mean, I don't want anything.
No, I know where you're going. It's okay.
God forbid something was to happen to one of them, and the cops got to the guy before you did.
Now, see, yeah, you've already, okay, you've set up the necessaries inside the hypothetical. Yes, cops have to get there first.
The cops got to him before you did, okay? Okay, and something happened. Now, if your daughter came to you and said, Daddy, I can't do this, you would drive her down there personally. And you would hold her hand to the... I know you. I've only met you for a little while, but judging by...
Yes.
...your family, you would hold her hand personally, and you would take her out and spend the whole day with her, and it would be just you and her, and you would turn off your cell phone, and you would say, we're going to get this... And you wouldn't go on the radio, and you would be... I mean, you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You would emotionally walk her through this, and you would let her know that, hey, it's not your fault.
Well, her mother and I both would.
But you understand what I'm saying, though. Yeah, and you would say, listen, you wouldn't have to explain to us why. You wouldn't be, there's just going to be everyone for a while. Too bad. And, you know, if she needed your help, you would stop broadcasting just to get her through this, because that's the kind of father you are.
Yeah, I mean.
And that's the kind of mother she would be. Why can't he be like that? I don't know. I don't understand. That doesn't make any sense to me. But anyway, I hope I said it was a real tough act to follow, and I'm getting ready.
You did fine.
I'm getting ready to go on the road, and I probably won't be following it for a while, but I will be listening. And like I said before, I've got a job, and I'm leaving Thursday. But I do.
Well, even if phones aren't working, you can always shoot an email at your leisure, Tony.
Okay, I'll be listening. And Sandra, you rock. Thanks a lot, Bob, and I'll talk to you later.
Hey, thanks, Tony, and good luck and congratulations on the job, my friend.
Take care, boss.
All right, bye now.
Bye.
Calling from Las Vegas. That's our buddy. That's our buddy Tony. And let's see, anybody there? Yeah. Nope. Okay. So that takes us to 10 before the hour, which leaves just a little bit of time before we wrap stuff up, have to wrap stuff up and get out of town. On his way, Rick Smith, the Rick Smith Show, coming to you live from behind the Scrapple Curtain in Pennsylvania. Stick around for that by all means. Just to, you know, not to put too fine a point on all this craziness, it is Moran Monday. And, an email first. This coming in from Jude of Women Standing out in Washington State. She says, I often ponder on all the negative statements made by the Christian Dominionists and the Republican right. When was the last time they stood alone in front of a mosque and stood there aligning for peace with those inside worshiping? To date, I have met not one Christian Dominionist Republican individual who could share their experience. I'm waiting to share about mine. What I found when I did it was peace, kindness, hospitality, and gracious gentleness. Sound familiar? Yeah, it does. Dominionists? Mm-mm. Scripture. Remember, that is what you tout. Scripture. And David in Tennessee noting with regard to the scenario that Tony brought up a moment ago, you know, why give another generation a truly evil soul? But that's what Jim DeMint wants. And he notes that all those who sang that carry the baby BS would not impose that on their own children. Because, again, it's worth noting that these are the sorts of people who are not interested in making, and, you know, this is just standard right-wing Republican and fair. They never, ever seek to pass a law to enjoin their own conduct. They seek always to pass a law to enjoin the conduct of those that they deem to be less upon the planet than themselves. That's how you get to the point where Joe Brandon Jr. is, where he can stand in a court of law and say, well, Islam's not a religion. Really? All that praying? It's not a religion? No, they're just thinking about, that ain't praying. That ain't even a real God. They just sitting around thinking about how they're going to impose Sharia law on all America, and all our good bikini-loving women is going to have to be wearing beekeeper suits. Yeah. But it isn't prayer meeting Wednesday, but no, this fits in with Moran Monday, and I'm not going to let this lie until Wednesday. I can't do it. Dateline, the Vatican, Roma. Did you hear this? This is brand new. It came out today. I saw it in show prep earlier today, and it's another one of those little just, oh, Jesus, where you shake your head. You ready for this? Are you ready for this? You ready for this? The Vatican, on Monday, criticized a decision to award the Nobel Prize for Medicine to in vitro fertilization pioneer Bob Edwards. And all this time I thought he was just hosting a radio news program on NPR. Oh, different Bob Edwards, sorry. To in vitro fertilization pioneer Bob Edwards, who has brought the joy of parenthood to millions of infertile couples. Because remember, the only reason for ever getting married, according to the Roman Catholic Church, is to have sex in the dark in the missionary position with no condom and create more little Catholics. Right? Right. You have sex, you gotta have a baby. If you don't, you're doing it wrong. Well, enter Ignacio Carrasco de Paula. Ignacio Carrasco de Paula is head of the Pontifical Academy for Life. Oh, it's an academy. I wonder if they teach geometry. The Pontifical Academy for Life speaks for the Vatican on medical ethics issues. And Ignacio Carrasco de Paula said, "I find the choice of Robert Edwards completely out of order. Without Edwards, there would not be a market on which millions of ovocytes are sold, and there would not be a large number of freezers filled with embryos in the world. In the best of cases, they are transferred into a uterus." You'll notice, come on, is anybody surprised? We're talking about the Roman Catholic Church here. He didn't refer to it being transferred into a woman or a human being. Oh, no, Ignacio Carrasco de Paula said, "In the best of cases, they are transferred into a uterus." Ladies, you're nothing but a uterus to the Roman Catholic Church, and their big dog for the Pontifical Academy of Life just said so. "In the best of cases, they are transferred into a uterus, but most probably they will end up abandoned or dead." You know, it's kind of hard to abandon something that you can't even see. Did we abandon it? I don't know. Where is it? It's like my contact lens. Or dead. And then again, it's kind of hard to have something die that isn't life in the first place. But, you know, who the hell am I? Which is a problem for which the new Nobel Prize winner is responsible. So, shall we understand that the Vatican has now declared that in vitro fertilization babies don't get to eat the magic cracker? Or do they? Or do you have to tell the church? Are you still in the church if you have in vitro fertilization? Hell, if you're unable to conceive a child in the dark in the missionary position, are you even entitled to membership there? You know, God just wants. I would love for somebody to give the response to these asshats that they deserve. I would give anything if Bob Edwards would look at the Roman Catholic Church and say, "Why don't you just close up? Why don't you just shut the hell down? You're morally, ethically, and spiritually bankrupt and dead. Clear out St. Peter's and invite Walmart to put in the local Rome store." Why not? Wouldn't it be nice? Just a great big old, "Hey, Benny, eat me. Wait, don't." Wouldn't that just be nice? So on the one hand, the Roman Catholic Church wants us to populate, procreate, but only if we do it the way they say. you know, it's enough to make you want to do the Walt Disney thing and have your head cut off and frozen so you can see the world in 10,000 years when there's no church in it anymore and the human beings are living together peacefully in harmony without religion tearing them to pieces. Well, if Bob Edwards won't say it, I will. Screw you, Benny. Drop dead. And that's the program for tonight. It ends on such a happy note. Thanks to everybody who makes this happen, from Lottie in the chat room to John Fox to Ben Birch to Matt Osborne to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to my head writer, David in Tennessee. Our op-ed columnist is Reverbo Cavalcade of Crazy. Thanks to the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. And always, always, always,